Welcome, everybody. The September 28th, 2015 regular meeting will now come to order. I'd like to note that there is a change in order to our action items. As noted on the blue agendas that are out before the board, the September 14th, 2015 meeting minutes have been moved to the superintendent's recommendation to allow for discussion tonight. So that's the one change in the agenda. And as a reminder, this meeting is being broadcast via audio tonight, with our meeting being hosted by Lincoln Elementary School. Thank you so much for welcoming us here tonight on the D41 website, and will be available at d41.org. Board meetings are broadcast also via video from the Central Services Office location. Copies of the agenda, if you don't have them, are available, I think, to the left behind the children as you entered. And for those listening at home, agendas are available at the d41.org under the board tab at the top of the page. So please look for that for the agenda. All right. Mr. Ellis, would you lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mrs. Moak, roll call, please.
Mr. Wojcinski?
Here.
Mr. Buckles?
Here.
Mrs. Clark?
Here.
Mr. Elder?
Here.
Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Mr. Escalante?
Here.
Mrs. Nelson?
Here. Thank you. Tonight, I want to turn this over now to Mrs. Schweighofer to introduce our principal here at Lincoln, to introduce Mrs. Piscini and the District 41 Choir. Is that correct?
Yeah. All right. So I just want to take a moment to thank you for coming tonight. We are so lucky to be here with our District 41 Choir. They've got quite a presentation for you. But I also want you to take a look around this space and to publicly thank the board for supporting the renovation of our library. If you were here right after school, this place would be full of books, tables, places for kids to work. And within just a few minutes, we were able to easily clear everything out because everything's on view and our space has a multi-use purpose. So I want to thank you for that. I'd like to turn it over to Mrs. Cassini. She's going to talk a little bit about the choir program here.
Hi, everybody. So this is not our entire District 41 choir. If we had brought them all with us tonight, you would not be able to stand in this room. There are, depending on the year, in between about 150 and 200 singers that we have. We have them come together twice a year, once for a fall concert, once for a spring concert. In addition to that, we also are going to be performing at the Chicago Steel Hockey Game this year, which has become a tradition for the District 41 choir. And we also host several social events for the 4th and 5th graders so that they can start to make some connections before they go off to Hadley, which is inevitable as much as, you know, we try. What happens is every Monday after school for about 35 to 40 minutes, we meet with our choirs at our school. So all four buildings are meeting at the same time, working on the same repertoire so that we can presented together in places like this, and of course for the programs I mentioned just a little earlier. When I say we, there are three other music teachers. I'm not cloned. I'm Wendy Piscini, and I'm here at Lincoln.
I'm Kira Quintero, and I teach at Forest Glen.
I'm Kelly Clark, and I've been here.
And Michelle Cousins is at Churchill. She could not be here tonight. She is private lesson. She has private lesson students, which she's working with this evening. So we would love to present to you two songs we're working on for our fall concert. The first one is a traditional spiritual called Joshua at the Battle of Jericho. And the second one is a popular song right now. You probably hear it on the radio called Brave, and it's done by Sarah Bareilles.
I heard that song before.
Talk about your men of soul. There's none like good old Joshua, and the
great performance.
Thank you for allowing us to come in and perform for you and for you. And it's just a little sneak peek of what we're going to be doing in November. November 5th is our concert over at Hadley. We got more to add.
Well, it was fantastic. And students, thank you for coming out tonight and helping us celebrate the Lincoln Library. Thank you for participating once a week after school in the choir to hone your skills. You sounded beautifully. Thank you so much. Parents, thank you for your commitment, for coming out tonight, participating and being with us in this incredible space. So thank you, thank you, thank you. But know this, please, you do not need to stay for the board meeting. You are welcome to head home, have dinner, or continue with the activities. Board members?
I just want to say I have as much fun watching the director of the choir.
Yeah.
And Mrs. Pacini and I have known each other for a long time. And to just get into it as much as the kids do. So thank you. And you mentioned Hadley. One of the things at Hadley Curriculum Night that I found out that I thought was interesting is a quarter of the students at Hadley are involved in the music program. So we have a wonderfully rich place for the children from all of our elementary schools to go to continue their music program. So thank you so much.
Nice job. We just have a moment break while we transition. You can leave, but you have to come back. You have to come back, so we'll kind of let the transition occur. That I don't know music very well, but it seemed like that second song was very challenging. I thought it was a tough song. Yeah. Again, I don't know anything about music. Wendy, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you all very much.
That was fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you.
Great job.
Thank you so much. Thank you for letting us come.
Thank you for
that was too cool. I just wanted
to put you guys.
Thank you so much.
I've actually been in two of Wendy's classes.
What's that?
I've actually been in two of Wendy's classes, and I know that I should have gone into the music.
You got 40, I think we had 42 students tonight.
42?
Wow.
Yeah, so pretty good.
I'd like to have that every meeting.
I just like the fact that the parents, all their video cameras, the smiles.
Including Joe.
Including Joe, yeah. I looked over and I saw a little Hannah out there.
Yep.
So that was pretty cool. That was pretty cool stuff.
All right.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody. Thanks for being here. I want to make one other note since we're here at Lincoln. We have several published authors here at Lincoln School academically, and there was an article in the September 18th of the neighborhood section that I kept that I know that there's been a conversation about this, but I thought I would just thank Mrs. Hartnaus if she would stand up and congratulations.
Thank you. Here.
Wonderful program, wonderful write-up in the Daily Herald, and continue the wonderful work that we see. Thank you. Thank you. We have a report now, a presentation from the Glen Ellyn Children's Resource Center.
Lisa Joyce and Denise are going to present for us tonight. So, Joyce, you'll start us off.
I just want
to. Wow.
There's all clapping over here.
Well, that was brave.
Good evening. I'm Joyce Hotan. I'm the Executive Director of Glen Ellyn Children's Resource Center. And I'd like to thank Dr. Gordon and the rest of the board for your hospitality tonight and inviting us to do a presentation about our collaboration with the district. Although a lot of you may know something about our organization, I felt it was important to really reach the broader District 41 audience so they could understand what we do together. We originally were founded in this very community in 2002 as a response to the influx of refugee families that resulted from World Relief in Wheaton having a contract with the State Department to resettle refugees, and it's actually an ongoing contract. Housed originally in an apartment, in Parkside Apartments, we were one of 14 community centers that were sponsored by DuPage County. Unfortunately, in 2004, the county abruptly pulled the funds from the organization, but a group of committed community members, among them actually board member Buckles, formed helped form our standalone organization, which is who we are today. This community really should be proud of the ongoing efforts that support its children. We are now only one of two of the original sites that presently that existed then. Since then, we moved from an independent site-based model to a school-centric model, embedding ourselves with the generosity of the district within school buildings in order to work hand-in-hand with classroom teachers and with staff. I have to say it's been a wonderful opportunity to collaborate with District 41 staff, and I'd like to mention the incredible dedication and leadership of this school's principal, Linda Schweikoffer, and her staff. I mean, through the years, we found out firsthand their commitment to the students and how their willingness to work together for the specific needs and betterment of each student is just outstanding. It's inspiring to be part of that team. And actually, last year, interestingly enough, I was contacted by a couple who deliberately chose to buy a house right here in the Lincoln School District because they wanted their children to be part of this school's culture. Based on having children from around the globe, they saw that as a strong benefit to their children and actually gave us a $5,000 donation for our efforts here, which was just a wonderful testimony as to the strength of this school and our collaborative efforts. I would also like to recognize Hadley Junior High and its staff because we work closely with Katie Lures there in the after-school homework program there. And we have volunteers that work with her. Our mission really is to provide cost-free after-school and summer educational support services for low-income children in grades K through 8 who reside within the boundaries of both 41 and 89. Our objectives are to enable children who are at risk academically to attain competencies in core literacy, math, and life skills. We also assist non-native low-income children to attain cultural literacy skills and to functionally adapt to life in our community. To assist parents as well as caregivers to provide educational support for their children and to gain familiarity with the school environment and their expectations. And of course, for a lot of people who aren't familiar or don't speak the language, that's a very intimidating process, and so we work hard to get parents to parent-teacher conferences to facilitate online registration, which can be difficult, as well as translation issues. Our program at Lincoln operates 5 days a week for a minimum of 10 hours a week during the school year and an additional 7 weeks in the summer with programming for 3 hours a day with additional days for field trips. We follow best practices of after-school programs. The majority of our students are indeed English language learners who have begun the program reading below grade level. Included in our Lincoln program are opportunities for our children to get involved in things like chess, robotics, art programming, soccer through the generosity of the Glen Ellen Park District. Other activities include our family Thanksgiving dinner where we cook and share a meal, festival lights, field trips to the museum, and theater productions. During last year's 2014-15 programming year, we served 130 unduplicated children. 89 were from K to 8th grade, and 70 students were rising K through 8th through 6th grade in our summer learning program. We extended our reach this year to the Churchill schools, serving 22 of their students during our summer program, for which the district provided transportation and snacks. Thank you very much. You can view our academic impact numbers in your folder that we gave you, and we're proud of the efforts of our staff and the volunteer tutors who really work so hard on behalf of the students in collaboration with Lincoln and Hadley staff. Our staff consists of one full-time director of program and volunteers, two part-time classroom coordinators, one executive director working 15 hours a week, one administrative assistant who also works 10 hours a week. Our budget for the year is approximately $195,000, with our revenues coming mainly from private sources. 30% come from very generous individual community donors right here in Glen Ellen. You can see a lot of their names in our last year's report, annual report. 42% come from foundations like the Chicago Tribune, Charities and McCormick Foundation, the DuPage Foundation, Top for Family Foundation. 15.5% come from in-kind things like the Glen Ellen Park District, District 41 for your program space, the Community Bank of Glen Ellen for our office space, and 12.5% come from our special events like Spellapalooza, which include a lot of teams from District 41, and you get extra congratulations because both the faculty at Hadley and the student team from Hadley both took first prizes in their division last year, so that was wonderful. And also of note, you know, we could not possibly have the budget that we have. I mean, it would have to be double the figures that we have if it wasn't for the dedicated community volunteers who come out, you know, sometimes several times a week, but every day to work with our children on one-on-one tutoring. So with that said, I'd like to introduce Lisa Tilkey to speak a little bit about our vision. And Lisa is our board chair.
Hi. Good to see you all, and thank you again for giving us this opportunity. As Joyce had mentioned, I am the board chair. I've been on the board for 7 years. Prior to that, I was a parent, and I'm still a parent, Lincoln parent, and I got to know the Resource Center as a member of the Lincoln community. I want to share with you very briefly just some insights about the community with a capital C and how it really supports the Resource Center and the children that we both serve. You, of course, understand as much as we do all too well the growing need in our community. Just one of the statistics I like to think about is when my child started school, there were around 400 children in both districts who were considered low income. As of last school year, or this school year actually, when I called about statistics, we're looking at well over 1,100 children in both districts who are low income, growing need, and it's a trend that's continuing in DuPage County and in our two school districts. Over 750 of those children are in this district. So we serve about 130. We're reaching maybe 15% at this time, something that is always on our mind. We know that these children are a far greater risk of failure in school for a variety of reasons. Language barrier being only one. And our vision or our goal is to help these children stay on par with their peers. Many of those peers, like my daughter, have a lot of resources at their disposal that parents are able to provide. How do we get the job done? Strong partnerships. And I want to make sure that we understand the in-kind support for the Resource Center. We mentioned it, Joyce mentioned District 41. The ability to be on-site in the school is huge. The ability for our staff to have professional development opportunities through the district, to work directly with the staff, and the staff for our tutors as well, is unprecedented. And really, our model wouldn't be a success without that. We also work with the library, the park district, Victory Sports Camp, University of Illinois Extension, all providing enrichment programs for the students. Norman Barkamp, by the way, has given 9 to 13-year-olds every summer get a camp experience. So we have a tremendous amount of partnerships that work for us every year, allowing us to do much more for our students beyond the literacy help. community members as well with gifts and with skills come and help our children with running, chess club, robotics. I mean, the list goes on, and we're really blessed to have these partnerships. Individuals in the community, just another fun fact that I'd like to share with people. We have, as of last year, 382 volunteers, individuals, who come into this space on a weekly basis. So we are a connection for the district, in a way, to the community. Many of these people no longer have children in the schools or never had children in the schools. And they come into this school weekly and have an intimate, loving, wonderful experience with a student and with a staff. And something I think that you should understand or know about what the Resource Center experience provides. These individuals, I call them our little army. We get 6,000 hours of work out of them every year. 1,900 of that is instructional hours, and 4,100 of those hours are one-on-one tutoring. So again, a lot of energy coming into the building and helping the students. There's a list of those volunteers in the report that we shared with you. So where are we headed? What is our vision? Our vision simply is to deepen our partnerships. Deepen our partnership with District 41 in particular so that we can reach more of those children in need. As I said, we're barely reaching 15% of those children right now. We would very much like to extend our learning sites from 2. We have 1 at Lincoln, a growing 1 at Hadley. We'd like to really grow that to 3. And we've begun working with the Churchill population with a nice summer pilot program, and we'd like to see that work continue. So that's the focus of our growing our support structure, growing our partnerships, growing our ability and our capacity to serve more children. Plans for a District 89 site are really in our farther vision. We've talked to them, but really we feel our partnership with District 41 already is on such a strong and healthy track. I will now pass the baton over to one of our newest board members, Denise Mubayi. I wanted to say that she's going to share with you some personal insights and perspectives. But Denise is a District 41 member of a community. She is a board member, as I said, an executive search associate with Riley Partners down in Chicago, a graduate of Hadley, of West, of Notre Dame, and yes, a graduate of the Glen Ellyn Children's Resource Center. So.
You gotta remember the kids' song, you gotta be great. But thank you again so much for having the Glen Ellyn GDCRC here tonight. I'm very excited for us to kind of share our program with the board, those new and those who've been partners with us for a while. As Lisa mentioned, my name is Denise Mubayi, and I am currently a board member at the Resource Center, and I was formerly a student of the Glen Ellyn Community Learning Center when I first came to the U.S. in about 2005 in the 8th grade. At that point, I had never read a chapter book in my whole entire life. I had never written a full sentence, and this is in 8th grade, Hadley. I was in ESL, English as a language. ESL, they changed it so many times. That was ELL or something of that sort. And so really, the GECRC was really instrumental to where I am today and where I've gone and hopefully where I am continuing to go when I first came to the United States. And so I just wanted to start just to kind of get you started in thinking about this. I want to ask how many of you feel that your children value that moment when they first walk into the door, and the first thing you may ask them is first give them a hug, maybe. Say, honey, how was your day today? How was your day out at school today? What did you like? What did you not like? What homework do you have? I saw that you had a C. What's going on in that classroom? Those, I bet, are moments that your students really and your children really, really, really value. Because they see that you're keeping up on them, keeping up on how they're doing. And so what the GECRC was for me is that parent. It was the parent that asked me after school, how's doing, how getting into the U.S. and how the students at school were treating me, how my grades were going. They really provided that socialization aspect that my parents, who I can assure you love me to death, or else they would never have left. My dad always says, I would be in Africa right now. I came here for you guys' education. But my dad has a third grade degree. In the third grade, his parents pulled him out of school, so he never had the chance to really finish his education. And my mom only finished the high school, but they really don't understand the American education system. They've never gone through it. This is a whole new land for them. So navigating my eighth grade at having never read a book or written a full sentence in my whole entire life really required a whole cadre of people behind me, and a huge part of that was the work that the GECRC did for my family and I. What the GECRC was for me is that it was a place where I could find friends. As an African girl with a huge afro, fresh, as they say, fresh off the boat, it was really hard for me to really understand the American culture. And when I came to the GECRC, I was able to be around kids who were also kind of going through what I was going through. I was able to sit one-on-one with a tutor who asked me how my day was going at school, and I would probably say, oh, I didn't understand what the teacher said, and they'd really sit next to me and do what a parent would usually do. While my parents, for example, worked about 15 hours of work per day and came home really tired, barely able to ask me how my day was going, even though I definitely knew they loved me. But the GECRC really played that role for my family and I. And then I went on to, after a few years here and long summers of reading To Kill a Mockingbird, after a few volunteers took interest in my learning and really helped me get to that reading level and writing level that I needed to be on, they really encouraged me to take on harder classes, and that's something that I went on to do in high school, really challenging myself every day, knowing that there was a huge community of people who really supported and were a part of my growth. And so that's something that definitely one gets through the school, but outside of school, where the socialization aspect is so important, that's the part that GECRC really played for in my life. And so later on, I actually went on to the University of Notre Dame, where I just graduated in 2014. And at the University of Notre Dame, I did a lot of research on after-school programs and the impact that they have on students. And a lot of the impact that, for example, the Resource Center here had on my life in terms of, one, it created a space for me to not only have peers and mentors, it created a space for me to really move forward academically. It created a space for me to explore the world. A lot of students, if you can recall, you're probably taking your kids to the planetarium or something like that and explain things outside of school to them that they would never get the chance to do. And I did a lot of that stuff at the Resource Center. And I saw that when I went to go do this research at Notre Dame, it was definitely something that backed up by some of my research and statistics. I was able to see that after-school programs have a great impact on students. When students come home from school a lot of times, and then those who aren't served by places like after-school programs, they don't have a place to go and advance their learning. Most of them will probably spend their time without parent involvement, and will be probably not doing homework or being involved in things that they're not supposed to be involved in. But places like after-school programs really create that space for students to have that education piece, to have that kind of guided socialization, to have a space to be leaders. And that's something that I've really noticed in my own life here at the Resource Center and also in my research of the impact of after-school programs. And so with that, I really, really believe that the space, and I remember my time here, actually at Lincoln. I used to come here with my siblings. I'm the oldest of five, and we spent so much time here just getting to know the community, being so intimately involved with even the kids in the community, because a lot of the parents would bring their children here, and it'd just be this whole diverse world really that added to my growth. And so with that, my research and also my serving on the board, I've really seen that there's just a lot of impact that places like after school programs really have for the children here. And one thing that I always wished when I was at Notre Dame doing my research was that we could serve more children. There's such a need out there. A lot of children who really don't have the resources like the ones that the kids here at the Resource Center get to get. And it really excites me that as we keep growing, and that is definitely something, a goal that we have for ourselves, and hopefully in partnership with the board, community members, we really, really hope that more students will have a lot of the benefits that a place like an after school program has had in my life. So thank you.
Thank you.
I just want to make a comment that is timely. I served on a study group through the League of Women Voters with a woman who's a teacher actually in Wheaton District 200. She teaches at Longfellow. She happened to mention to me that some of the children that have families have moved out of the Parkside apartments as that's transitioning a bit, right? We happened to overhear a teacher say, we have, you know, some new children. This was last year, coming into this year too. And so this league member that I worked with said, and when she found out that they were coming from District 41 and Lincoln School, with both the teachers but also the support system through GECRC, she said, oh, don't worry, they'll be fine. So I think that's a tribute to the school, but it's also a tribute to that support program afterwards, and so that other teachers in this area recognize the value that it provides. So it just had a conversation I had literally a week ago, so timely.
I just want to say to all three of you and to all your volunteers, you know, thank you for your passion. Thank you for your dedication to our students and our community. Thank you for the tireless hours, because I believe it's more than 15 hours you put in. I'm just guessing, but just thank you to each of you, to all the volunteers, for making a difference in the lives of our kids and our community. Thank you.
I think there's a lot of things to brag about in District 41. But this for me is my go-to spot. Mm-hmm. What you guys do and how long you've been doing it and the results that you get is phenomenal. And when I travel for a living, and when I'm other places, if we're sitting around a dinner or something, more often than not, we end up using examples from what you guys have done to even work in our own organization. I remember... I live in a spot where a lot of the kids cross the street right in front of my house. So I remember when everyone was coming in the early days, you know, when people were showing up and didn't even have, you know, American clothes that they could come to school in, and all that got taken care of. And I just thank you so much for this. It makes a huge difference, a huge difference.
Thank you. But I really think it speaks to the fabric of this community, and the generosity of the people who live in this community. So I really thank everyone.
Thank you, Joyce. Thanks. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thanks for being here. Thank you, Danny. Anything else? Do you have a question? Yeah, go ahead. Sure.
I more had a question. I was just curious, and thank you all for all you do for the community. I was just curious, you know, with the vision to want to expand at Churchill, do you have any information as far as, you know, what's needed to do that or costs associated with it? I don't know if you wanted to get in that tonight. That was just something I'm curious about, but I didn't know if you wanted to get into that, but more my curiosity. What do you think is needed to be able to accomplish that?
The question is about the practicalities or the specifics about deepening. And I think we began this summer talking about how we could stretch our resources along with the district's resources to serve children from Churchill. We realized that our summer program had enough room in it to serve an additional 35. I think the resources needed are significant, and yes, of course, we do have our dream budget. We worked on a grant to the United States for 21st Century grant application, and of course, we had a dream budget for that.
Yep.
It was not funded. what's important to understand, I guess, is that the Resource Center is fully, is 100% donated funds. Mm-hmm. So the in-kind is significant. The space is there at Churchill. The interest is there. The partnership, you know, is there. It's the funding for the professional staffing that we need. And that's kind of the juggernaut. The Resource Center has been trying to build a reasonably sized reserve so that we could take some of our resources and expand into a third site. We're not there yet. We do feel if we can get a pilot started at Churchill, the community in general will understand and rally. It's amazing what happened here in Lincoln's community. I was one of those parents who, when it was something right happening here in my school, I immediately saw the value, immediately wanted to help it, both with my time and my resources. We really feel the Churchill community has resources that can be tapped, of course, the first step is getting a foot in the door. So I don't know if I've answered your question. We do know how much it would cost. We do know that sort of thing, but we also know the cost is really in the people. And until we're able to bring in people to... Volunteers are great, but you need professional staffing to make the program excel.
Just to add to that, I think we're at the point, you know, and I've been talking to Dr. Gordon and Dr. Scott about what's our next move. And so, you know, once we at least have a structure, you know, my philosophy is the money will come somehow. So I think what we need to do is, you know, put that first proposal together and at least, you know, we'd love as... Lisa said we would love to serve all the 200 children that need help there, but we know we're not going to be able to get there. But can we start with 50? You know, what can we do? And then just and grow from there. And I think that's a possibility, I think, as we've seen in the Lincoln community today.
Are there other grants you're pursuing right now, Lisa?
There definitely are. And we're always pursuing grants.
I understand. That's your other job, yeah.
The pro bono. So giving of time and resources. And the interesting thing is, as we grow and get into more sites, the ability for us to tap into larger grant sources are there. So you can reach kind of a ceiling. And we're kind of there. We have some very good funders. We have some that are interested in seeing us grow. And if we had another site and could show that we were reaching more children, we probably would be able to expand our funding base there as well. But, we always continue to do that. And the 21st Century Grant is always out there. We can try that one again.
Try it again.
That's playing in the big leagues, frankly. And, we know our needs, but Glen Ellyn, in comparison to districts in the state such as, you know, the city of Chicago, Elgin, you know, we pale a little bit in comparison when it comes to the needs statement. Not that we can't get it.
No.
We're
working.
We were quite competitive enough.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Lisa, I had a question.
Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned the pilot. What do you think funding wise to get a pilot going? What could you actually give me a dollar amount? Mm-hmm. A
couple of staff members.
Well, I would tell you, cash wise, when Joyce said our budget here is about $190,000. Cash of that, the cash needed to do a program such as we have in Lincoln, is about $75,000, and that's bare minimum. Mm-hmm. That's just, you know. But that's serving around, you know, 75 children with staffing of a full-time program director. So we're also looking at a variety of staffing models that might be different if we had multiple sites.
Mm-hmm.
So I hate to throw numbers out, but I think that's the ballpark we're looking at to do a full program, a pilot, a smaller program, maybe one, not a full. Right now, we operate throughout the full school year here at Lincoln, maybe operating for one semester and doing fewer. We can basically create something of a certain size that would be less than that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't... I hate to throw numbers out because my executive director's going to really kill me. But am I about on target? And I have some board members here also who can chime in if I'm taking us off too far off course. I think the message is we've been raising money, trying to be very frugal and setting money aside so that when the opportunity's there, we can move into a new space, at least for the pilot program. But that would require partnering and looking at creatively how we might be able to do that, to stretch our dollars as far as they can. And that once we're in place, we really do feel that building, we're fairly good and successful at building individual support. But it really does take getting to know us.
Because I think we need an ongoing source because, you know, obviously savings accounts can, you know, be drained. So, I mean, we have a little bit of rainy day funds, but the idea is we do need, like these grants that we have, are oftentimes multi-year. So, you know, we're looking for those kinds of opportunities.
So it's a conversation we'd really love to have. And we've started, and I think the summer program was really a success.
Mm-hmm.
Was a success. From our perspective, it was a great success. The kids just really blended right in from the moment they got off that bus the first day and you know, knew the ropes. And I think it was really a great experience for us. So we really feel like moving into Churchill is a great next step. We also know it's a different school. It has a different population from necessarily the refugee population here. We've had those dialogues as well. So we're not saying that we would cookie-cutter the model, but the sense of really using some of those best practices in the model over there as well.
I agree. I mean, I think Churchill's an ideal location for that.
Mm-hmm.
And just keep in mind, I mean, when the county cut funding, it was about $600 to the bank. Casey Sanders and I looked at each other and said, oh, and I won't say probably what we said at that point,
yeah.
But you're right. I mean, if you get that in place, there's resources here once they see that.
Right.
So in some sense, they believe that they
I guess, and that's a really great way to put it, Kurt. I think that's really where we are as a board, ready to kind of take that leap of faith we have with a little bit of cash in them, with a little bit of, being. Trying to be respectful of wanting to maintain the program here and not put it in danger.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for your partnership. All right, the next piece of the superintendent reports. We move things around a little bit. We'll see how it flows. Maybe it works. Maybe it doesn't. But we wanted to see if this worked. So first piece up as board recognition, I want to congratulate Kurt, Stephanie, and Erica, who will be recognized next month for their achievement of award in the IASBA Masters Board Member Program. In addition to their time, members spend attending regular meetings, committee meetings, and their district liaison assignments. They commit their time to the Illinois Association of School Boards School Leadership Curriculum. The School Leadership Academy promotes and recognizes board members' efforts toward continuous learning and professional development. All of our board members have participated in this program and will have the opportunity for additional professional development in November during the III. But I want to recognize the three of you. Thank you for your dedication and your continued learning. So appreciate that.
Thank you.
I want to address the change order resolution follow-up. Just wanted to clarify some details of the change order resolution that we talked about. On May 28, 2014, the administration brought forward a resolution that would give authority to Bob Cicerella for change orders of $50,000 or less for the upcoming elementary classroom additions during the summer. At this meeting, the board gave administration direction to return to the May 12, 2014 meeting. With a resolution that would give administration the authority throughout the 2014-15 and 2015-16 construction project. It's important to note there was no lapse in the resolution. It was a lapse in recollection of what transpired, and it is a detail that I believe that would have been caught if it weren't for the transition within our finance department. But I own that piece. I just wanted to make sure that the community was clear that there was not a lapse in that change order resolution.
I think the important thing, though, last meeting we thought it was only, there was discussion that it was only around the summer.
Yeah.
And this actually, whereas, says it's beyond the summer, just for the whole length of the project.
Yeah. It was 2014-15 and 2015-16. So just wanted to make sure we have that out there.
I do think I was in that meeting. The recollection still holds for me that it was really sold as for the summer. And Joel, you yourself thought it was for the summer.
Actually,
as well.
When you brought that up, I looked up all the confirmation just from the last meeting, and that's why he did some research, because I didn't feel, and I didn't know, because my recollection wasn't that good, because I didn't know. But it was pretty clear when we voted on it. The whereas, so these are delays between board meetings, including a nearly 2 month span in the summer. We're just saying that 2 months was included, but it was for the length of the project. Mm-hmm. So I did give them a look, but I didn't know.
Yeah.
I wasn't certain. But I didn't feel comfortable with what was said at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Since I didn't know, I wasn't going to say.
You did vote on this, though.
Yeah, I know.
Correct.
I didn't remember that language.
Yeah. Well, it was,
Kurt, to clarify, I felt comfortable that what you said, I didn't feel comfortable with. That I felt comfortable with.
You didn't.
I wasn't going to say something I didn't know because I didn't want to speak incorrectly. That's just.
But the reality is there was a resolution in order for the 2014-2015 and 2015-2016 year. That's the reality of the situation.
Thanks for the data.
A question I had on that. If the original resolution included 2015-16, then I was curious why we created a new one.
Because this was
for Bob.
Oh.
He had the authority.
Changed the name.
It
that
moved
was,
to.
That was the discussion upon his resignation. Was that?
Yeah.
Well, and this is good information to have in my. It's good that you clarified that the original change order was for the whole year, but I guess my recollection was different. But I think I still go back to last week when we discussed this. If it hadn't all happened in one night and had been vetted over a 2 week period, we couldn't even work some of the stuff out and answered my question. So mm-hmm. I think that.
Do we know it? But it's more than a year for the length of the project.
Yeah.
I understand.
No, but you just stated a year.
Sorry, yeah, the length of the project. But if we had taken that 2 week time to vet it, we could have talked about this, answered some questions, and that wasn't done.
Mm-hmm. Enrollment report follow up. I gave the board. What they requested, additional enrollment information regarding elementary. Board wanted to see the literacy numbers. Board wanted to see Hadley course and classes. So we made sure that we gave you those pieces. For community member who requested that, that's a piece that certainly FOIA'd and that we would recognize that FOIA for the Hadley piece. The board members, did that give you the necessary information you were looking for when you looked at the literacy piece? If we just focused in on the elementary for that report, did that help clarify?
I know for me it helped clarify because I was just curious the breakdown mm-hmm. in the level 3 lit classes of fourth graders to fifth graders. But I do in looking at it. It is interesting to me because it looks like at some of the schools, the classes are pretty even. There's like 12 fifth graders, 13 fourth graders, mm-hmm. kind of across the board, pretty even, two or three either way. But then in some of our other schools, you have 19 fifth graders and 7 fourth graders in one class. And it's kind of like across the board is like that in all the classes, really high, 17 fourth graders, 9 fifth graders. And I'm just wondering, if how the classes are created, did it really fall out like that just based on the groupings of the kids, or are we using different philosophies at the school and how we're grouping them together? Because I would imagine, a fifth grader that ends up in class with only 9 other fifth graders and 17 fourth graders is going to have a lot different experience than a fifth grader at another school that has, 14 fifth graders. So I just thought it was, I don't know if the kids okay. didn't get to see this, but there's definitely just inconsistency how we handle it across schools, and I don't know.
Well, you don't know how many kids are going
to. But
I was thinking about that too. But then I was thinking back to the, you know, each the uniqueness of each school, and I think it's hard to presume that the level at which the child is going to be, because there's fewer of one grade level or another, will be less effective or, you know, different outcome. I mean, each school is going to have its, you know, I think uniqueness. But I was helpful to see this, to Stephanie's point, just to see how it laid out. And in particular with Hadley, because there is there's always that question about the class sizes, and Hadley is, you know, an animal unto itself. And when you have special education and DLL, you know, you're going to have the example that you gave us. There's one child with this particular teacher, and that's a pullout on the report. So you think, oh, there's a class of one. Well, it's embedded into
the other
class, and so it's just good.
There's some nuances behind it. Yeah. And with any of the numbers, I mean, they're just not the numbers sitting there. There's a lot of information behind it. How do they group them? When principals work with teachers and developing those class lists, you know, those are pieces that they have considerations, they talk about, they look at different numbers. Joe?
I guess something you said, inconsistency about how they're handled. Do you mean inconsistencies of the results?
Well, I guess the balance to fourth, fifth grade.
Right, so the results, because you don't know how they're necessarily handled, so not the inconsistencies of which they're handled,
I guess class design.
The results.
Yeah.
It was meaning that some, like Forest Glen has less equal fourth and fifth graders relative to the other schools. So it's the results that are inconsistent, because you don't know how they're handled, right?
Or why certain children were pulled in. Yeah.
Right. I mean, I don't know the reading levels of anyone or how the kids were grouped together
but it's
interesting to me that, like, at one school, all of the classes are very one-sided, very high in one grade, very low in the other. But then at another school, all of the classes are pretty even. And so, in my mind, that's not just how the grouping fell out by how reading level. That was almost like a conscious effort to do it that way.
So you're surmising that they are handled differently.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I don't know if that's true. I'm just basing that based off of the numbers that I'm looking at. It just my concern is, you know, all these kids are going to the same middle school. You want to make sure they're, you know, kind of having similar experiences. And you know, I would be concerned if I had fifth grader that only was in class with 26 kids and only 9 of them were fifth graders that they were going to have to with.
But your question is, are they handled differently or are just the results inconsistent?
And I'd follow up with that to say, you know, how are we monitoring these kids? You know, I mean, to Stephanie's point, if I'm a fifth grader and I'm with a large block of fourth graders, you know, is that best for me? I mean, is that the best thing for me? And how are we monitoring that? What kinds of things are we doing to make sure that those kids are okay? You know, we've seen nothing at the board level to show that, so you know, they're valid concerns.
I think this is where also, Stephanie, the point you made up is when we talk about what's behind the numbers is knowing that during school improvement planning days, SIP days, and when there's planning time between grade levels or levels, that there's that conscious conversation around that collaboration. What are you doing? How is it working? There's grade level assessments. There's district assessments. So there's toolkit that teachers are using to make sure that they're looking at, you know, if I'm having great results over here, you know, hearing teachers say, we got to figure out why and how and, you know, replicate that as we can. So I think that's part of the follow-up.
And I would say that we are monitoring it. We had the academic update in June, and actually Joe even commented on it when we had the breakdown of the 4-5 numbers for the past 2 years. Those 4-5 numbers in literacy were outperforming others, and Joe even commented on that. Well, what would that mean for that? So we have shown from a district level that academic progress. So I just wanted to make sure.
But you're back to, again, you don't know with all the variables that you've added into that, into all that, you don't really know for sure Joe made a statement with absolutely nothing to back that up with. He made an assumption that that could be one variable. We've done no digging down to see if that was actually the case. So again, you're making a statement that you don't know for sure is actually factual. And we've seen nothing since then that proves that
the factual is the data is improving.
Well, you alluded to it that night.
It was an observation, right?
Which, yeah. You know, you can allude to it, but again, it's an illusion. So.
Inference and implication are two different things.
Okay.
But the thing is, you only made a statement of cause and effect. Well, just as the cause and effect.
Because Dr. Gordon just said that he did, and I heard you say it. So.
Mm-hmm. But I think I pointed out.
Important thing is that teachers are really the focal point in what they do to work together to, you know, that's at least the messaging that I think we've heard. Mm-hmm. So
one of the questions that also came up was around the I apologize.
Some of the other questions that were asked were about AEC.
Yeah, I was just going to get to those.
Okay, you got the AEC and then
kindergarten.
Like large numbers of large numbers of sections.
Yeah.
Including kindergarten.
Okay. So as we looked at it, most of those, as the board knows, those are targets. Most of those are over by one student, maybe two students. But we did look at the kindergarten was brought up as a really good example. And it's important to note that our principals, assistant principals, staffs, really work with our community members and really try to accommodate many of their needs. And one of those, when you look at the kindergarten, for Franklin, and I can't remember which one it is, they either have an AM or PM kindergarten bus. They don't have both. And when parents request a certain time and the bus only occurs at that one time, mm-hmm. Mr. Samples, his team, really try to work with the parent community to get those students in that AM or PM. And I can't remember which bus you have. Do you have an AM bus or a...
We have an AM bus.
Yeah. So that's one of those pieces, kind of the numbers, the information behind the numbers. Mm-hmm. There's a little bit to that. So when we looked at that, that was one of those considerations when it came to the kindergarten at Ben Franklin, because I know that one was specifically was pulled out.
But you still, I mean, even with, I know that there's, you know, maybe higher numbers because of the buses, but even if you were to move some of those kids out, say, to the afternoon, you still have some pretty high numbers in kindergarten with classes above mm-hmm. the targets. At Franklin, at Lincoln, at Churchill too. So, you know, I think the question is, I know a community member asked the question, and I've asked the same question, is how are we going to address, especially those young grades where we are above the class size target for whatever reason.
Yeah.
You know, because in my mind, 25 kindergartners in a class versus 25 fifth graders in a class is a big difference. Especially when you have kids coming into the schools who, some of them have never had preschool and have a lot of different needs, and they're only there a couple hours. And I just want to make sure, you know, we have the targets for a reason. I want to make sure that we're addressing it if we're going above the target, or, I mean, I think the discussion at the last meeting was, are we going to address it if we're above the targets, or are we going to change our targets?
Mm-hmm. Well, it becomes, the first point of addressing, because I asked Paul this after this discussion, was, you know, certainly the principals working with the teachers, and it's an issue of classroom management. I think that's some of what you're getting at, right? So that's first line of defense. It's their building, their classroom, how they handle it. They're the experts in the room. But the other, you know, the next step to that then is, and I know there was a year, and I forget when it was. It was a few years ago. But there was a section that had to be added to Forest Glen, and I want to say this was probably like 40 years ago or more. And so it really dropped class sizes. So you had... because it was just enough where there was the need to add the section, but then it really showed some, you know, of the disparity. So you had a classroom of 17 children and 19 children and 20 because it was dispersed. But for that particular building at that time, that was what was needed. So it begets the question, you know, there's added cost to that staff, et cetera, and so... In-house, those are those questions that the principals work with the teachers on. Are we where we need to be? And if we realize there's a big issue, then certainly the principals are going to come to Dr. Gordon and say, we got a problem. So I trust that that's happening.
Oh, I apologize.
No.
So we're in that process. We continue to have conversations with principals about those. Where are we at? Do we want to add an aide to those classes or not? So it's that ongoing conversation, really, where Lori takes lead on it, continue to have conversations with cabinet, continue to meet with principals around each of those numbers, around when, and for teachers, knowing that their students exceedingly well. You know, if there is that case, what you were talking about, where we have a large number of students who may be below grade level, is that another factor we have to put in there? So that's what we continue to have those conversations and make some decisions very soon. Does that help?
It does. I mean, we're 5 weeks into school, so I understand what you're saying, Erica, that I think Stephanie's saying, if needed, are we looking at additional resources? Not necessarily every section, but are we looking at additional resources? Because if we're not really looking at the targets, the board sets the target. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's we approve the target. So if we're not adhering to the targets, then we should just get rid of the targets. You know, and so at that point. So. Mm-hmm.
So Paul, when do you think by December, January, we'll know kind of if you guys are looking for aid?
In the next few weeks.
Okay, so
in the next few weeks,
we can start looking at next year's budget.
Yep, and that we have a line item for that.
Okay.
That piece, so that's an important aspect. Regarding AEC, was another question on AEC.
Can you state what that is for the record, the acronym?
Advance, give me the, I'm bad with my acronyms anyway. I knew I was close.
Advance Enriched Curriculum. Just want to make sure.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. So with that conversation around AEC, it's really about, with each of the schools, how are we going to group the AEC students when they're in the AEC class itself and when they come back into the classroom. So when they head off to their AEC, what is that grouping? And Karen and the principals and some teachers work diligently to select students for the AEC program. So when they head off to their AEC class, and then when they come back into the classroom, how do they want to group their students? Do they want more than two or three, or do they want a larger group of students within that classroom? So those are conversations that occur at each of the buildings. I personally don't make those, nor do Lori. Those are building-based decisions around how to group students once they're back into the classroom.
Did the schedule have anything to do with those groupings?
Trying to think from a looping could have, but not the schedule. Looping could have, but not necessarily the schedule. Does that answer it?
So, Paul, I'm looking at you like, why is this not sitting? Because I recall, and this is just Ben Franklin, that there was questions about events and courses and it's math or whatever it was, that it wasn't happening anymore. So,
it's happening in math.
Right.
Okay. Because I'm looking at you.
Yeah.
So we're both having that same look at each other.
So I think this might be one of those things where this might be a topic for the council, PTA council, because I know advanced curriculum was one of those things where people wanted to know where it was and where it was, some things changes. So that might be one of those where we push to that group to
inform.
To inform and the leaders to say, as you go forth into your schools, let them know this is the conversation.
Yeah. No, I'll have Karen do that presentation. No. I knew you were looking at me, and I was like...
Yeah, because I was like...
I'm trying. What do we send them to the PTA
council? Yeah, just having Karen update the PTA council on AEC, kind of that overarching, what is it, how does it impact, those types of pieces.
Nothing's changed, is it? Yeah, okay.
No.
Just a reaffirmation of what it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's information.
Informational.
The question on the enrollment report was really more, why are all of the students coming out of like one or two classes per grade?
And that's what I meant by the clustering.
Yeah.
How they cluster, and those are school-based decisions.
So, I don't know. I guess in my mind, I don't know if it makes sense to have all of your, I mean, all of your AEC kids in one fifth grade math class together. Or those should be spread out amongst them. And not all the schools are doing it that way, but you know, when you have eight kids coming out of one, I mean, it does two things. It makes the one class really small when they're doing math because you lose eight kids, but also, you know, you lose eight kids that are not part of the conversation. And when that class is doing science, you don't have those eight top-tier kids spread out amongst the other classes. They're all in one, so...
I know the principals are really thoughtful about that. They work with their teachers. They work with others to, and they think about all of those pieces that you brought up. And for that group of students at that time, that year, that's why they chose to do it in that manner.
I know. I think parents kind of feel like when those kids feel like they're moving together year to year, and it just feels like we're tracking kids based on ability when we keep them all lumped together like that.
I appreciate that.
It seems counterintuitive to what I've been taught for best practices.
Okay. If any parent has a question, please reach out to the principal, and they'll have that conversation with them.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, that's a great connection. On to Hadley. How did that Hadley data, did that work for you? I know. I know.
Data.
I warned you.
Yep, it's a lot of data.
I mean,
and there's a lot behind those numbers.
Right.
And I only gave you a brief... piece on that front page piece.
I think when you look through it, and the column that I was looking at was, you know, totals in terms of the section. I mean, you start to see some consistency around numbers 28, 31, 29, 22. You know, and again, we're looking at numbers, not children.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that needs to be highlighted, that the principal and the teachers at Hadley, it's the counselors also weighing in on what the needs and interests are of each child, because they're different.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not like an egg carton where you can fit a dozen in and move it in. It's, you know, there's a complexity to it that I certainly can't appreciate. And it's, I'm sure it's a moving target too as the year starts as well. So I appreciate how challenging that is.
Yeah, and I don't think for this it was just more
curiosity. It's exactly what you guys asked for. Yeah.
It wasn't concern, and it looks pretty
As a middle school person, it looked pretty good. I was pleased with the numbers overall, the class sizes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Would you guys like that once a year? Just a quick snapshot?
Follow up, like, we're at that 100-day number thing.
Twice a year, the first semester and the second semester, just so the board can see if there is any changes. So we can do that for you. Good. Survey plan. Mrs. Clark, Mr. Buchholz brought forward a survey framework 2 weeks ago. We spoke with Bill Foster today, we being Erica Crabiel, wherever she is, there, front row. spoke with Bill Foster, and we would propose very similar to the framework, that we would start with a HumanX survey. That's the culture and climate survey for staff. That would be done in early October, so in the next few weeks we'll have that. The school perception school district survey, the one that was done about 18 months ago, that we would do that one in late January, early February. You can get us back those results in a timely manner. We'd really be pushing them around that late January. And then that, and for that one, that's that staff, parents, students in grades 4 through 8 that would participate in that. And that would be followed by the community survey that would be given in the late spring. One of the pieces that he recommended is don't stack your surveys on top of each other. Don't every 4 or 6 weeks. Make sure you have a lot of time in between the surveys, or you're going to have a lot of survey fatigue going on in your
community.
Yeah. So make sure there's some good separation between those. HumanX survey is ready to go. We'll continue to work with Bill Foster on developing the school perception school survey. We'll have those set questions that we've had in past, so we have that longitudinal data, and then we will ask additional questions that board members have requested to be on this next survey.
Can I clarify something you said,
please,
Paul? You said late January, early February, and then you said we're pushing it in late January.
I'm pushing for it to be launched in late.
Promoting.
I'm promoting. Got promoting.
Okay.
Thank you. That's a better term. I want it to be launched in late.
Late January.
Late
so
January.
So we have a little bit extra time coming out of
just
conferences and that. And
spring's going to be on top of us.
Right. And the reason I asked that question is because I know that part of the ask around that was so that the data could come back and something realistic could be done with it in terms of the principals then taking it back into their schools, et cetera. So I want... Personally, I want to be realistic about what that might be.
Mm-hmm.
And did Bill give you any insight on that in terms of turnaround? Because I know one of the things that School Perceptions does is provide, all they do is survey.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they do. They don't do anything else. And so, one of the things is that kind of descriptor plan on, okay, here's next steps.
The easiest part are just the numbers, crunching the numbers. The survey companies can turn it out pretty quickly. The hard piece are the comments, just ensuring, one, we're redacting names, those pieces like we did last time. That takes time. And then analyzing their survey comments take time. And that's something that we would have the survey company do for us. So those two things take a little bit extra time for us, so we just need to... That's why I want to ensure that we begin the survey in kind of that third week in January is where I'd like to propose getting that piece on.
On the 4th?
Yeah, so we can get back and get the data back to us and ensure that we have the comments back to us and all the redactions done as well.
So, Paul, we're starting to build a survey program here. You gave us a lot of information. I just thought.
Please. My wife stops listening.
and this isn't, and I know it's a draft, and you guys are just starting to talk about these conversations, but can you put I don't want to say a Gantt chart together, but you don't want to put something that far, but can you just put October launch survey, expected turnaround, 4 to 6 weeks, expected delivery of results 2 to 3 weeks after? I'm not saying putting dates out there, but we're starting to put this mound of clay and we're starting to mold it.
Yeah.
So as we work through this and we're talking about these things, we can kind of say, okay, we're into February, we're into March, we expect results, principals go out and kind of do things. Boom, you're in summer, and then the next survey's out in October. We're starting to build this.
Absolutely.
And I was going to try to do that while you're writing, and I stopped listening to try to put the pin down. So.
And we would need a direction from the board. Is this? Are you comfortable with this? So we can re-engage Bill Foster with School Perception, so we can put all those dates. So if we launch on this date, when would you close the survey? And then when would you get all of our data back to us? But before we got into all those conversations, I just wanted to make sure that does this feel like the right overarching survey framework that we've talked about in the direction you want us to go?
Clarification, because there was discussion. I think we discussed adding questions to that end of January survey.
Yes.
And you had discussions with them.
We can do that as long as we keep that set, those original questions, clean. We're fine, so we can continue that longitudinal data.
Right.
We can add on to the survey without it hurting the results of the survey.
Just from a process standpoint, you're going to work areas of questions.
Absolutely.
Questions, and then you'll work with the survey company on the questions themselves.
Yes, let the experts do their work. But yeah, we will keep the board abreast, just like we did with the survey roughly 18 months ago, where the board saw the survey and gave us some feedback on the survey. As we move forward, we'd do the same thing. Oh, sorry, Drew.
I had a question. I kind of understand. We've got the three different pieces, from a 30-foot level. I kind of get what we're going. Is this the framework that's going to be used going forward? I know this is 15-16. Would I anticipate 16-17 would look similar in terms of that framework?
I think it would look similar. for the first two, the culture and climate and the school perception survey, just easier to call it that way, and then the community survey that we do every 2 to 3 years. That's one that the board would continue to weigh in on. Do you want it every year from Bill Foster's when you're doing those community ones, large overarching, you know, the entire D41 stakeholders? Recommend that that's probably every 2 years or so from there, because that's when you...
But the other two pieces, that's kind of like...
That would be the annual.
That's roughly the same time period, year over year over year.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So you're going to bring us more information?
If this is where you're at, yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm okay with it.
Okay.
I just have one comment.
Okay.
When you talked about fatigue, I wouldn't be that... I mean, I'm okay with this time frame, and I understand. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't worry too much about fatigue. And the community survey is really... It's hitting 100%. Of that 100%, 20% of it is taking the school perceptions survey. So your crossover is very small within that. So, you know, you're going to have the 20% that's going to take the school perceptions, and that 20% could also then take the survey. But the 80% is just the community survey. They're not going to see.
Yeah, they won't see the other ones.
Yeah, so from that, I just want to make sure we don't start to think fatigue becomes an issue on surveying, because we really want to know what everybody's thinking. And it's really, the crossover is just not there.
So. And I apologize. My fatigue was ensuring that it's not on top of each other every 4 weeks. That's why I'm recommending the spread of it. So I apologize if I wasn't clear enough. Not survey fatigue overall, but just ensure that it's not in a tight time frame.
As far as the additional questions, are we going to have a board have that on the agenda?
Yeah, I'll bring those types of questions that we're proposing. We would have that piece for you.
So we can have a discussion and add to it. Or
yep.
But these are framed so that there's difference here. It's I think one thing that we've talked about is topic areas. The other thing is the actual language, which the survey experts write based on outcomes. So it isn't a, do you like this versus reading, you know, writing it really from an outcomes assessment based approach, so that you're getting some data that says here's where they are or are not.
Yeah, so I wasn't talking about survey questions. I was just talking about topic.
Kind of topic areas. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you, Paul.
Absolutely. I apologize. I got a little bit more here. So at a last minute, a parent asked around measuring the change to the school day. Some of the ways that we'll be monitoring that through the surveys, the process, and both the classroom and school-wide achievement data. So I just want to make sure we touch base on that. Just a quick note, somebody had also asked around map testing, when we're going to complete that. Hopefully in the next couple of weeks, as we put in the District Digest NWEA map, as some of our teachers recognize, NWEA had an attack, an outside attack onto their overall system that really, really caused havoc for our teachers, for our students. It was a few weeks of a lot of pain in the classroom in rescheduling and getting back in there, but it had nothing to do with D41. Our students, our teachers, it really was an outside attack on them. No data, no student data was ever compromised. The intent of the denial of service was really about disruption of MAP itself. That was the intent of whomever or whatever was trying to slow them down. So we should be able to wrap up all of our MAP testing in the next 2 weeks.
Do you think that disruption in the class, I mean, this is just a gut check
from
the principals. Do you think, wow, our kids went off the rails because it went down so many times, and we're going to have to take these results of a little grain of salt because little Johnny was, you know, playing around with the eraser for 15 minutes?
You know, our teachers could answer that, but I think we got some pretty resilient kids. I do, resilient teachers, too, because that's a real frustrating piece to put up with when you're doing that. I don't think so, but you know, those will be pieces that we'll have to look at. It's not an optimal testing environment, I'll tell you that.
Right.
That is not what we're looking for, multiple interruptions during the day. But I wanted to make sure that we address that piece as well. Yes, sir.
Did that then push out the date that the kids were taking it?
Yeah, it just because they had to reschedule they had to get back in the classroom, and sometimes it was down for a whole afternoon or a whole morning. And so now the teachers are having to figure out a new time. And then it started happening every day. So it wasn't like they could, okay, tomorrow they were back in it. Well, they were kicked out 10 minutes into the starting now. But so it really pushed them out. Probably, and the problem lies in kind of the individual kids who may have missed a day or two. We've got to ensure that all of our kids take that assessment. So it was a lot of frustration, a lot of rescheduling on part of the teachers in their lives and their curriculum.
What has NWEA done to assure the...
Mike works with them a heck of a lot more than I ever would. So
what they put out is they apply filters to their servers that would detect these quicker and squelch them. And that's basically what they were doing for about a week and a half. So we were noticing slowdowns, maybe an hour, hour or two in the morning. It was pretty consistent, pretty much every day at that time. So they were much more vigilant as these went on. So the attacks grew shorter because they jumped on them quicker. And I would say, well, we haven't had any issues today. And back end of last week, I'd say from Monday on, we were pretty clear. So
clear of interruptions.
Them being right, them experiencing those attacks. So hopefully that means they've got it figured out.
Okay, thank you.
One thing I think that though it may impact, which is not, but if you know, a child is taking it maybe a week and a half later, he's had a week and a half of instructional time. So when you're looking at growth, you know, it's going to change that growth figure a little bit that maybe we have to take a look
at. It's a good piece. I mean, it's not optimal. There's nothing...
I'm not saying this is a bad
thing. Oh, no.
But when we're looking at growth pieces for our teachers, you know, they've had, you know, when they're taking it early on, they've had, had less instructional time. The further they get in, they've essentially learned more, and that's going to impact, you know, their growth may be lower than it would have been because they're taking a little bit of layers. So we should notice that for our teachers so that they know could be some growth impact.
Yeah. I think we just need to note it when we're looking at it next year. We need to remember it. Yeah. So another question that was asked was around wind time. Wind time was really about, it was a set time within the elementary schedule to deliver what every kid needs in that moment. And it was really about differentiation. So what we've done through the schedule and our conversations the last couple of years is really, and it's an important aspect within our D41 model, is around differentiation. But differentiation happens all the time. Doesn't happen in just a one set, you know, 30 minutes a day. We've got incredible teachers who are responsive in the moment because they know their students. They're looking at data. They're looking at that live data right in front of them on a moment-by-moment basis and ensuring that they have that differentiated instruction, meeting the students' needs where they're at. So that was... It was about 2 years since we've had that. I think it was my first year here that we had wind time. We communicated with the teachers about that piece, but it's not a part of how we do our schedule or the structure in which we operate. It's an embedded aspect of how we do our work on a daily basis in all classrooms.
Paul, the concern for me with this, and I agree with what you're saying. I think that, you know, the best teachers we have would say that they're doing that all day long. The problem I've got with it is that there's a couple pieces to it. First off, the board approved Think Tank. Not this board, but the board approved the Think Tank piece. A major component of Think Tank, and you were not here, but as parents that had great concerns about this, and literally great concerns about it, we were told that wind time was the centerpiece of this. You know, we knew that it wasn't, because we knew that teachers were not going to just be, you know, differentiating for a half hour each morning and each afternoon. But to the community and to the sales job that we put on for parents, we made this the cornerstone. In fact, did some looking back, and I'll just read a piece of this, but wind time, as it was sold, and this is from our own literature, what is wind time? Wind time stands for what I need. Students will have two wind times, one for literacy, one for math. Wind will be similar to targeted learning time, a time for students to receive help for extensions and enrichment. It's a highly individual time that can be used flexibly to help give every child what they need when they need it. If I was a parent hearing that, I'd think, wow, that is awesome. And we just took awesome away. And the board was never told of this. And again, the board's kind of involved in this because they approved it. So that may not normally be the case with curriculum, but in this particular case it is. And, you know, I talked to Mr. Curry. I know that you left a message for him. You said absolutely the right things, that it should be that way. But again, as a guy that's on accountability, we had administrators here that told parents that we absolutely had to have this. And either it wasn't something that we needed, and it clearly isn't something that we needed. And so from that aspect, you know, it raises concerns for me that if we get recommendations from those particular staff people, I have concerns about that. So because I was told one thing 2 years ago, we had four thinkers in the audience that were parents that said, hey, we're not quite sure that we really need this. And we were told we absolutely need it. And 2 short years later, we've changed that and it's gone. So, you know, again, people need to own up to what they told people and said, hey, we made a mistake with this. And, you know, I think it might go a long way to some people out there that really have a lot of issues about
things. I don't know if it was I don't believe it was a mistake on their part. I think people were thinking that they would set aside a specific chunk of time, 30 minutes, both math and literacy, to drive that targeted instruction for students. But as we continue having conversations, we're just thinking that in a more holistic environment, that happens. How do we help that occur all the time?
It's happening prior to that. I mean, this is a best practice. Differentiation all day long is a best practice. We were then told that we're going to abandon that and go to this. And that's what the people that run our school district told us was going to become the best practice. It's now gone away because this really wasn't what we should be doing, and that's why it's going away. If it was what we should be doing, it would still be there. That's where my concern is, and that's where I have concerns. And again, people make decisions around here. We followed those decisions. They ignored people that had concerns about it, and those decisions, the people that made them, need to be held accountable for those decisions. Because it was a mistake, or we wouldn't be getting rid of it. We can soft pedal it as much as we want. It was a mistake. And if it was as good as it was supposed to be, it would still be here. And we would have districts across the world coming here finding out about that. So I said my piece about that.
Okay.
Thank you.
And I think the only thing I would add to that goes towards, I mean, truly, we've added a lot to our schools that we're doing. And I think there was concern at the time of, well, we're adding so many variables. How do we know what's going to make a difference for kids? And we've taken away one, which I don't know exactly what was used to evaluate it, but I think that's kind of where, you know, maybe an explanation is, mm-hmm. like, well, why did we decide to get rid of it? What did we use to determine that? And, you know, the same can be said. You know, there's some questions about multi-age. Are we going to expand forward with multi-age for all grades and seeing literacy like the plan is? But our academic update that we had this summer, there really was no focus on what we were thinking of multi-age or how it's going. And I just think,
I don't know. I'll finish my answer
for that, but I think that's part of the frustration. We just keep throwing things in, pulling things out, but are we really evaluating what we're doing and making sure it's making an academic difference?
So differentiation does work. It does. It has made a difference. I just told you why we went away from wind time, because we want to see it at every moment throughout the class day.
You evaluated it and you realized that
we can have more of it on a continuous basis.
But the point, I think, the frustration is, instead of just saying, you know what, it really didn't work out the way we thought it would work out, we evaluated it and we moved in a different direction. You continue to go ahead and make excuses for something that we all know obviously was a mistake to have done. And it was sold to the people in this community as the cornerstone for this. And again, you're clean. You had nothing to do with any of this. So, and you've said the right things. Differentiation's been going on since they used the stone tablet in the cave. So this is not anything new. This is not something District 41 does. These are neighbors in Wheaton and Lombard do this. They've been doing it. They've been meeting Common Core. They were doing it without wind time. They were differentiating in their classrooms. They didn't have to make these changes. They're getting along just fine. So, again, at some point around here, if we can just have somebody say, you know what, we probably did not do that properly, and hopefully internally, again, it's your staff, hopefully internally, some people are being talked to about accountability. So.
All right. So grading was another piece that came up at last week's board meeting. A question was raised about grading, how it compares with Glenbard West. Both D41 and Glenbard West use a 5-point scale. We report out on the standards. Glenbard West reports, gives an overall grade for that course. So there are some similarities, but there's differences in two. One of the biggest differences in we're two different districts. We feed in, but as we've I've had conversations with principal at Glenbard West, he does not believe, he's asked his teachers, he's asked other administrators, does our grading system inhibit students once they get there? The data also indicates that our students continue to do well, but they don't believe there's anything with the grading systems that have slowed our students down as they transition in. So there are some similarities. Probably the biggest one is it's both of a 5-point scale.
I guess the question still with that is, I know we use the standards, but you know, for the grading where we don't use the standards, like a science test or a math test, why our percentages don't align with West? I think that was the big question. Our percentages are 85 to 94 is a 4, 75 to 84 is a 3, and so on. Whereas at West, it's 90 to 100 is a 5, 80 to 90 is a 4. So I think that was the question, is why does that percentage scale not align with West?
And does it need to?
No.
Okay.
No, from my perspective and the principals at Glenbard West, it does not need to. It is not shown to.
But why would we make it different, I guess?
But we have a higher bar for our students. I think that's a good thing in D41. I think having higher expectations for our students to achieve at that level is an important piece for us.
Mm-hmm. So we have a higher bar for District 87, is that what you're saying?
No.
I'm talking about D41. D41.
She asked why we're doing we have, said we have a higher bar, so that must be, since it's not aligned with District 87, District 87 must have a lower bar?
No.
That's your conclusion, but I think it's really important. We're two different districts.
Feed into it.
We absolutely feed into it, but when we hear back from the principal, who sat in front of the board in late spring, mm-hmm. and we asked him that question, do these grades impact? No. When I asked him, when I had a parent send me an email about this, who said students were struggling mightily in athletics because of the grades, that wasn't true. It wasn't true. It's the truth is, our kids are well prepared for Glenbard West. The data shows it. The data showed it over time.
I think we're making a presumption. What I'm hearing is a presumption that a middle a K through 8 grading system is going to match with a high school system, and the high school system, and I think I gave this example, is first of all you have leveled classes and you have kind of regular curriculum, and then you have honors classes and you have advanced placement classes, all of which are weighted differently. One of the things I think was a takeaway from our science program when we went to the standard base that was replicated actually up at West is that they, their math classes that replicated is that they teach by targets, and I've described this before, but in each of my son's classes, they have a grouping of targets, and as they go through targets 1 through 1.2.3.4.8, they are assessed on those, and then they have a chance to do a retake. And so they're in some ways it's symbiotic to what we're trying to do at Hadley in terms of getting them to see the standards that they're meeting or not meeting. I think those things have some similarity, but we're making a presumption, and I don't know that we need a long conversation around this. It's certainly we could ask the question, but we're making a presumption that a middle school especially is going to replicate a high school grading system, and it's not. I mean, I don't think a West grading system is the same as even maybe another high school around here. So, I think the outcome, and my question to Mr. Monahan, and we heard it actually from Sean Byrne too, who's the director of the chair of the science department, that it's that kids are ready, they come in prepared. They're the kids taking, I think this is almost verbatim from what Peter Monahan said, they're the kids taking the honors classes, they're in leadership positions, they're balancing those schedules. And so that those department chairs are in those eighth grade conversations, you know, by January and early on. So I just think it's a little bit of apples and oranges, and really the question is, do we need to do something differently? And we're hearing no.
So. That's what I mean. Like, my question was, we changed our grading system. We went to a 5-point scale, mm-hmm. and we didn't align with them. So I just wanted to know why. And it sounds like the answer is we wanted to hold our kids to a higher standard, and that was more important than aligning with less, which is fine. That's all.
But there was never an intended outcome to align. I mean, that was never. Yeah. That was maybe what you want. But that was not what our parent wants.
It is to provide
parents. That's what we do. We represent these people. We carry these forward. It doesn't mean that this is our agenda.
No.
These are questions that were asked.
I think to Stephanie's point, we heard that parents wanted to have, they wanted to have that extra grade piece within, because there needed to be more. What's the word I'm looking for? Differentiation.
I'm merely bringing back what I heard at curriculum night from parents is, mm-hmm. how do we go to a 5-point scale like West, but we still don't line up with them? That was mm-hmm. that okay. was the question I had asked. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
So the answer not is my we can concern. Say we're holding them to a higher standard.
We have a 5-point scale, and we. All right. We had a question about first grade. Why in the MOU is not time built in? Remember, first grade. Second, third, fourth, fifth, have teacher specialization. First grade does not have teacher specialization, so they would not need that same transition time to go into their other classroom, drop off their stuff, get their stuff. So that's really what it was around, all around that transition for them, the teacher specialization in first grade.
But if the teachers are being, because there's an issue with especially the younger kids eating lunch, if they're then being told to go early, they're technically in violation of their contract. Because the contract piece allows for the 10 minutes where there's transition time. The contract piece has more instruction time. So if they're being told by the building principal to go earlier so that the kids are technically getting their full 15 minutes instead of getting less than that, they would technically be in violation of the contract if they were leaving early, because in their contract it says core instruction. In their scheduled contract it shows core instruction. So I think that's, you know, again, as we said last time, I think that's an internal issue. I think it's been asked. I don't know that answers have been given. So maybe that's some more conversation that you guys can have.
And this question came through because I know when I was asking about the schedule, you know, you told me that, you know, that because I was concerned, well, lunch has been shortened 5 minutes, but there's transition time built in there, so really lunch isn't shortened because they're getting that transition before lunch and they're sitting in their seat at lunch.
Mm-hmm.
My concern is, and I said, is that built into the schedule? And the answer is no, but it's part of the MOU. But when I look at the MOU, it does show transition time for 10 minutes for grades 2 through 5, but first grade has no transition time. So in my mind, that means first grade lunch is shortened 5 minutes. They do not have guaranteed transition time, and technically the teachers are in violation of their contract if they put that transition time in there, because the MOU says core instruction in that 10-minute block that grades 2 through 5 have transition time. So that's my concern, is first grade lunch really, based on the contract that we have set up with the teachers, have we shortened the first grader's lunch by 5 minutes and not given them transition time? And if we're, you know, could...
From a technical standpoint of the contract.
From a technical standpoint
okay.
of the contract.
Okay. All right. I think that's enough of my superintendent report. That thing felt like it went on forever.
So I can look into that.
All right.
All right. Thank you. Public participation. Thank you for staying and waiting. I'd like to remind members of the audience that speakers should identify themselves, complete a public participation form, which I believe around the table over to my left, your right. And limit your comments to 3 minutes or less. If your comments have substantially been reflected in others, we'd ask that in the interest of time you please forego making them, and that you provide the board with any copies of written material that you may have. Personal complaints and criticism about staff members, students, or other members of the District 41 community should be initiated privately with the appropriate district representative. Also, profanity, interruption, and or other interference with the orderly conduct of the meeting are not permitted. All questions raised will be forwarded to the appropriate D1 staff representative for a response as a response is warranted. Is there anyone present that would like to address the board at this time?
Jeff Cooper?
Ms. Tess? Yeah, if you wouldn't mind, that'd be great. And there's a microphone down here, so you'll get picked up.
Thank you, Jeff Cooper, Glen Ellyn. In my unsuccessful quest to this point to get straight answers from the board president about how we paid for the assistant principal's position back to 2013, I'm going to talk about the evening that's at the crux of all this, June 10th, 2013. Okay. During that evening, which you might remember was one of the top 100 people to meet the band's support, so it was a very crowded lot of activity. There was a motion during the meeting to go ahead and hire two assistant principals. And there was discussion about that motion, or there was discussion as part of that motion, and some notes I've made here. Specifically, Mr. Escalante wasn't in favor of this motion. He wanted to hold it off for a year, and also heard the discussion also from Mr. Bochinski on a similar thing, to hold it off for a year. With that having been said, Dr. Reebok went ahead and utilized her speech powers, pressured the board with talk of having already spoken with two candidates, already having interviewed them, that they're ready to go, and that the reputation of District 41 would be damaged if we didn't follow through and hire these people. Okay, so we got that covering over all our board members. Mr. Escalante proposed an amended motion where an equal amount to one of the two positions, I believe it was for Ms. Stone, that her salary would be subtracted from the 2013-14 budget. Okay? That's exactly what was said by Mr. Escalante. This would be subtracted from the 2013 budget to create a where it wouldn't cost the taxpayers a penny for this extra position. Okay. The amended motion was approved 4-3, and then it went forward as the motion and was passed 7-0 to have the two new assistant principals hired. Okay. And that amended motion was what Mr. Escalante had said specifically, that there would be $90,000 subtracted from the 2013-14 budget. And that wherever the money came from, it came from somewhere, but it was going to be deducted from the budget so that it did not cost the taxpayers.
About 20 seconds.
Mm-hmm. I'll speed up then. So the minutes of that night, okay, from June 10th, on page 4 of the minutes, it specifies exactly what I just said, okay? And I think there'll be some discussion later about that. But District 41 and the board never did this. They took the money out of a pocket. They moved money, which I had passed out from Dr. Gordon, what he had told me last year. They took money from already budgeted from the Human Resources Department to some other personnel department. So, bottom line is, you guys have never done what was passed by this board in front of the people of this district. And you owe us honesty, which I haven't gotten from you. You've been giving me all kinds of strange answers. But this is, I'm just about done. Mm-hmm. You give other people just a little leeway. You need another 15 seconds. So you need to go ahead and go back. It's on the audio. I listened to it today. I heard everything I've just said, okay? Everything else that I've been told, including by the person who said it, has been denied. Okay? I mean, I can't seem to get a straight answer here. You owe us $90,000 out of next year's budget to make up, and then the years afterwards, we're supposed to be part of the discussion.
Okay? Thank you.
And you'll never answer me if I don't finish saying what I say now, because you don't. You do not answer.
Thank you, Mr. Cooper.
You do not answer people.
Thank you, Mrs. Moe.
Okay? You can thank me until the cows come home, but you don't go ahead and follow up, okay?
Thank you, Mr.
We deserve the follow-up from our board.
For the record, there have been several emails back and forth between... Please have a seat, Mr. Cooper.
If you're going to go ahead...
This is not a debate.
Please have a seat, Mr. Cooper.
I don't want to have people being disingenuous in front of me here. You give me no straight answers at all.
Mr.
You give
Cooper,
me answers.
Thank you.
You don't need to jump over the moon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Nancy, who's next?
I apologize. Erica, it's not our practice to respond to community members, so I'll respond during other matters if it's okay.
Follow up. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Frey.
I'd like to thank Dr. Gordon for getting back to me on the wind time, what I need, which was a part of the think tank as discussed here earlier. It was all about differentiation, and it's been taken away. It was a big part of the discussion during the think tank, the lead up to the think tank of what we're going to do there. And I don't know why, if it was taken away, it wasn't discussed with the board, because think tank was sold to me or sold to the community, and that was a big part of it. Once the board approved think tank, you guys became the experts or a partner in curriculum. I didn't hear anything about taking away think tank during the assistant superintendent of curriculum and instructions discussion of the academic update. So the community really didn't know about this being taken away until I asked the question. We're on the cusp of having to decide whether we want to implement multi-age in second and third grade. And I would like a response on that. What are our thoughts on that? Where are we going with that? And what's the future of that? I don't know if that's going to be discussed between you and me or if it's going to be discussed amongst the board. But I think it's an important decision that needs to be looked at. I guess my other thing is, if the model's so great, you know, we got to level, the only thing left really is multi-age, specialization in second and third, and then multi-age and specialization in level three, fourth and fifth. I have a personal academic update on that. My child went from about the 75th to 85th percentile on the math tests, all the way down to the 45th percentile, 65th percentile in third grade. She got to level three. She did not grow 1 point on her RIT score. Not one, during all of level three, fourth grade. This is hitting me personally.
About 1 minute.
In the sense that if this is the best model ever, why is my child showing, starting up at the 85th, 75th percentile, and going down to the 30th or 40th percentile? Maybe my daughter would have benefited from that wind time. It would have been nice to have known that it was taken away, because you guys own it. And I don't always feel that the answers we get show that you own it. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Mr. Curry. Mrs. Moak?
My name is Celia Rody. I live around the corner on Hill Avenue, just a couple houses away from Stephanie Clark. I am a parent of four children who graduated from Abraham Lincoln, and I thank the teachers here for doing an extraordinary job for them. I'm also a member of the Glen Allen Children's Resource Center Board, and I have three comments. I want to thank each of you for your service to our community, our children, and your commitment that you share with me towards helping create successful future citizens. At least I assume that's our shared goal. One, I'm appreciative of the concern that Stephanie Clark raised, asking about class sizes and targets, especially for the lower grades. I have a personal case study with my now 25-year-old son, who was in a class of 29 first graders in this school in 1996. And those children tracked all the way through, up through Glenbard West, underachieving. And I later read studies about how first grade sizes so critically matter. Mm-hmm. So Stephanie, keep paying attention to those numbers. Mm-hmm. And school district, find ways. I think the studies also show that extra adults in the classroom don't do the trick. You really need to find a way to reduce class sizes. And I know that that's not easy, mm-hmm. with limited space. But I'm here with a personal case study. But that wasn't really the reason I came tonight, but I'm glad that I did. The Glen Allen Children's Resource Center, you heard from three of my colleagues, by every measure, makes a meaningful difference in the lives of the students who are able to participate in it. I hope it got your attention, as it has gotten mine, that 1,100 students in our community, over 700 in District 41 could qualify if we have the resources to do it. So I'm hopeful that the district will make a serious commitment to this. We are fortunate in Glen Ellyn that we have citizens, private donors, all the people who do what Joyce and what Lisa and what Denise talked about. And Denise graduated the same year as one of my children, and she is a personal, I mean, you don't get a better poster child than Denise. Lisa Tilkey way undersells herself. She wrote the grant. She wrote the grant that the district, that nobody from the district participated in the heavy lifting on that. We are really lucky to have a professional grant writer volunteer her services. So I just am hopeful that as a community we can find a way to touch more lives. Mm-hmm. And Kirk, I'm glad you asked the question. But the last thing I want to say is to give each of you a personal invitation. I know it's probably already on your calendar, Mr. Buchholz, but March 4th, 2015 will be the annual Spellapalooza. It is the most fun, nerdy community event. emceed by our chief of police. I know, Dr. Gordon, your schedule hasn't permitted the last couple years, but Ann Reebok was a huge supporter, and we hope
we've got it on the schedule already.
Committed to share, but all the board members as well. And I know you'll already have it on your calendar, and thank you for supporting me in the past.
Yeah.
One of the, I know, big check, thank you. And I co-chair that event, and it is one of our biggest fundraising sources, but it's also just a great community event. So thank you, Bob. Thank you for what you do.
Thanks for being here tonight. Thank you. Mrs. Moak?
John Rack?
Celia, by the way, you have a commitment for me to keep following up on the children.
Hi, I wanted to thank Dr. Gordon for calling me this week and following up about the enrollment report. After the discussions and phone calls, I had a couple more questions and observations. I'm still not sure about what the benefits of 4 or 5 multi-age are right now. One grade is not following the Common Core for the entire year. You said tonight that you got rid of one time because you wanted a more holistic approach with integration and differentiation, and the teachers were good at differentiating. If that's the case, I love the word holistic at child-centered elementary schools. How about at least considering looking at specialization then, going one step farther? If you got rid of the wind time, getting rid of specialization would allow for more of the integration. My other question was, are literacy classes still being grouped by the Classroom scores? Going over that enrollment report that Mrs. Clark was discussing, the class target sizes, this wasn't mentioned at all about how they were grouped. I know you said that principals go back and ask the principals about how they're doing it, but it seems like all the principals must be doing it differently if some of the 4 or 5s are equal and some are less. So I'm just curious to know if they're still being grouped by those RIT scores. And then, kind of going up what Mr. Curry said, is the plan still for the age 2-3 literacy for next year? And who would benefit from that? Meaning how would the kids benefit? Because I'm still not exactly sure how 4-5 is benefiting, so how would 2-3?
About a minute.
Yeah. If I had, let's say, a K reader, Fontes Pennell, love of K, in the 2-3 literacy block, I would go about teaching them differently if they were second grader. The second grader at level K is on level. A third grader at level K is below level. So I'm not sure how as a teacher I would go about teaching them if they were in the multi-age group. So I'm interested too in the progress of that. And I also recall that 4-5 STEAM is in the future too, and I was wondering if there was any discussions about that. Everyone is talking about how well our kids are prepared when they enter Glenbard West. They're the top class, they're great, but they're all entering Glenbard West under the old traditional model. We haven't had any of our kids enter Glenbard West yet under all of this new stuff. So when we keep hearing that they're well prepared, yeah, they were well prepared under the traditional model. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Rick.
Agreed, Jen.
Mrs. Moak?
Lynn Schweifoffer.
Good evening.
Hi. First of all, I'm so proud to be here.
and you guys will be here in my school, our school, with a number of teachers that are sitting here today. I want to thank them for coming. But I also want to talk a little bit about wing time, because I think it would be wrong of me not to clarify some things with you. The D41 model has always embraced differentiation. And actually, when I came to the district, I think 14, 15 years ago, we had a number of staff that went repeatedly, or went year after year after year, training staff with Carolyn Thompson, who happens to be an expert in, a natural expert in differentiation. So it's something that D41's teachers have embraced for as long as I've been here. And we do it well. Now, the question is, we got away from wing time. And I know there's a number of people who asked that today. And as a principal of the school, I have not had one phone call about that. And I'd like to be able to clarify that, because I think that's important, especially now that it's out in public. Wing time is a time that in the schedule where kids get what they need. They still get what they need. They get what they need every single day. That's a time that's designated for kids that need ELL services, kids that need special ed services, kids that need enrichment sometimes, and other types of differentiation, kids that need a little more time with the teacher to catch up. That happens today. It happened last year. It happened the year before. It's not a block on the schedule right now. It doesn't mean it doesn't happen. What it has is provided teachers more flexibility by saying, okay, it's not necessarily has to happen in this half hour of the day. That I may have kids that need, that we could be able to get services outside that time. So, for example, if I only have a need for so many kids to see a PRIS teacher during a certain block of time, but I have kids that need it in level three, that there's some flexibility there, that I'm not locked into that block of time. So it still occurs, and differentiation is something we're really good at in this district, that our teachers are really good at.
About 30 seconds.
Thank you. And that's really all I want to say, that we own all kids. And it was there last year, it was the year before, and it's here this year. So thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Hi,
you know, Kurt, well, it's not discussion. It's just public comment. It's not discussion. Mrs. Moak? That's it. All right. Thank you. All right. We are going to move into a closed session for a brief amount of time. I have a motion to adjourn to closed session to discuss discussion of lawfully closed meeting minutes, whether for purposes of approval by the body of the minutes or semiannual review of the minutes as mandated by Section 2.065 Illinois School Code 120-2C21. May I have a motion?
Motion.
Second.
Roll call.
I'm sorry, I didn't second.
Drew. Mrs. Clark?
No.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Buckle?
No.
Mr. Elder?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
All right.
We are
moving back here. Feel free to stretch. Leave if you need to. We understand. Thank you. Back in open session. Thank you for staying. Discussion items, meeting minutes adoption. Go ahead, Paul.
So, for the process, we've had conversations about the process for the meeting minutes. Everybody's seen that. I don't think that's something that I need to go over. So, we'll adhere to, I hadn't heard anything else, but we will adhere to that process. I think that next piece that we really need to talk about are give administration, Nancy, myself, direction on what you want the minutes to be. From our perspective, they're summary minutes. So I just think it would be better if the board could give myself and Nancy greater clarification on what the board is seeking for their minutes.
Well, just again, to give some context, this process for approval of meeting minutes came as a result of having some conversation around the process that the minutes go through, grammatical errors, typos, that type of thing that go to Mrs. Moak. And I want to thank Stephanie for coming in last week. We sat down, Mrs. Moak, Dr. Gordon, and myself, and Stephanie, to talk about the best process moving forward in terms of being able to have minutes available at the meeting, be able to review them and get them out as quickly as possible, because the history has been that you have your meetings, and 2 weeks later the minutes are reviewed by the board. Any typos, grammatical errors, I didn't say I said nay, etc., are corrected and then brought back to the board, for instance, in our blue sheet, so that we know that those are amended, and then they're voted on in either the consent agenda or if they're pulled. So the process is to make sure that Mrs. Moak is aware of any questions or concerns, and then that those minutes will go back out to the board in advance, so that we have a chance to review them and can come back with some comment on whether or not, you know, that line item or that inclusion or whatever, we agree to and take a vote on that in terms of the minutes. So this is the process. Again, just to clarify, does anybody have any comments about it? I think it's pretty straightforward, and it came as a result of that conversation last Wednesday. All right.
So now the
right. So the discussion is, and this will come up actually a little bit later in the agenda, because we pulled approval of the September 14 meeting minutes today. There were some additions made or edits requested by Stephanie that came to Nancy and that were sent to us this afternoon, right? Am I getting that right? Okay. And then the other a set of meeting minutes that we'll be approving outside of consent agenda is the approval of August 10th, and in order to make corrections to those and correct the process, and we'll talk about that. So we're going to have some deeper discussion in terms of our opinion about it during those minutes. But what's the consensus of what's the individual comments from board members on it?
On the process of minutes, not on those other two pieces that were mentioned. Just on minutes. How do you want us to capture this board's minutes? That's the question that sits in front of you. So just give us direction. Mm-hmm.
So you're asking for, okay,
what are,
beyond the process, the summary, what is it that the board members want within their minutes?
Well, I can start. We do an audio recording of the minutes. We put it out for people to review, and we keep it out there for quite a while.
Yeah, we've never taken down the audio. There's an audio.
Okay.
Yeah.
So to me, that's the transcript. So I think if we can capture in the minutes the basic things that were discussed about it, it's not important to me as a board member for you to write down everything I say or how I said it. Mm-hmm. I certainly think that the votes need to be recorded, the motions need to be recorded, and I'm fine with that.
Okay, and then a summary overall.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. I guess I kind of agree with Dean's point. I think we need to have some promotion. Me, in terms of minutes, when I review minutes, I like to see that the flavor of the discussion is captured. I'm not looking for, verbatim. I'm just, what was the flavor? What was, how were things kind of communicated? Just kind of the big picture.
Okay.
I know it will be shocking, but I disagree with this. You can go back and listen to the audio. It's much easier, I think, for most people trying to listen to audio if you don't actually know where it's at. Try and go back 3 years. It's much easier to pull a couple of meetings that you may think that it was during that time frame and skim through and read and say, there it is. So for me, I agree with Drew. If there's a split board vote, it should be captured as to why that is. I mean, why certain people voted a certain way and other people voted that way. It is the chance at history. And to go back, and again, some people are not big on accountability. I'm big on accountability. I'm big on being able to go back and say, what did we say? What were the things that were told to people? And did we follow through on those things? And so the written history of that is very important. It doesn't have to be word for word, but I think, not picking on Nancy, it's been done a certain way around here. I just disagree with how it's been done around here. So I just think that, they should be expanded. Having said that, under the process now, We certainly can ask if we think something is important to a particular mm-hmm. board member that it be added.
So, absolutely.
You know, and that makes the process fair. You know, and so I'm okay with the process that we've developed. But it's important for me to capture history, and I just think it's easier for the taxpayer, for the customer, to be able to find issues that they want to look up. It's just easier to find them to read than actually listen to the presentation.
And Kurt, if I could just summarize for you, from what I heard, it's really important when it comes to the votes to be able to capture the statement as to the why of the vote, mm-hmm. either yay or nay. Mm-hmm. That to you is a really important piece that we need to capture. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm going to add to that because I agree with Kurt.
Okay.
He was kind of dovetailing, but I think Drew was kind of summarizing in there mm-hmm. the spirit of what was discussed. Mm-hmm. And I think limiting it to that, as Kurt did, is appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
I think when we get off, we start writing more about discussion topics, about board reports or things like that. Go back to the tape, the gist of it, a quick summary. There's a reason we have a secretary. I mean, if I start rewriting them, or Stephanie does, or Patrick does, I mean, maybe it's better that person is a secretary mm-hmm. after a while, because, you know, it's the goal of the secretary to summarize.
Really good.
But the point is that we all don't want to spend and add 5 or 6 sentences,
mm-hmm.
and we could. We choose not to, but we have a program going forward. In the votes where, you know, if it's a 7-0 vote, maybe it still should have something, the flavor of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 7-0 vote. For the votes, I see more robust written word to be captured. So I agree with the first group. I just want to limit it after that because, you know, we don't need to rewrite the minutes all the time on one item I said. An event, right?
So votes critical, discussion, board reports, other kind of those big topics that people can hone in on and go find maybe the great that detail within the audio.
Exactly.
Okay.
I would agree with what Drew said that. And I think it needs to be, you know, I haven't really had, I mean, there's been little additions I've had to the minutes, but in general, I think the format and the way that things have been captured has been good. There's just been, I mean, a couple of instances where, you know, I just thought a sentence needed added or a question that was asked should be added just for historical purposes so you know that conversation was had, because otherwise you would have no idea that it was mm-hmm. discussed. So, and I know we're going to go through my corrections later in the agenda, or my proposed additions, I should say,
mm-hmm.
for later on. But I think the last meeting is kind of an exception because we had kind of a different process. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the typical way we do minutes.
Miss Mook was in here. She was in junior time.
I think this is an unusual amount what I have.
Okay.
For tonight or later, but I think, I mean, I know personally haven't had issues with how things have been captured. It's more like, hey, can you add this sentence or this question that was asked? It's not rewriting how it was captured. I haven't had issues with that. So it's more just adding a little bit.
Okay. Patrick, any?
No, it's good.
It's good. So what I'm hearing.
Can I weigh in real quick?
Oh, I apologize.
I completely agree with the vote piece. I think when we take a vote that it has to be as accurate as possible because people are reflecting back on that. And typically, to your point, Kurt, I think that's what people are going back to look at sometimes is what was the intention behind it, what was the purpose behind it. So, you know, when there's been corrections to a recommendation when we're taking a vote, I think that's a valid area to be. My concern is, and I'll give an example as we get into this when we look at the minutes, is there's additions that are what I would say under board report or discussion that are detailed around an opinion or a statement, and I look at it and I think, well, but I said after that X, Y, and Z, or somebody else said something X, Y, and Z, and then what I feel like it becomes a transcript. And I disagree with that. I think the spirit of the minutes are captured, but we want to make sure that any kind of vote is absolutely accurate and why people felt a certain way or had an opinion about something. But after that, I mean, there were several instances where I thought, yeah, I followed up, or Joe followed up, or somebody else did, and then I'm thinking to myself, now we're writing transcripts, and that's not the intention. I mean, our own policy, when I went to look at it, you know, includes 8 items, and item 3 says a summary of the discussion on all matters proposed, deliberated, or decided, and a record of any votes taken. And to me, and the other protocol that the recording secretary follows is from IASB, and that's minutes include a summary of the board's discussions on the agenda topic. The minutes do not state what is said verbatim, right. And that's been our approach. And I, again, clarifying votes, absolutely, and I think Stephanie's brought that out in a couple instances, which I think is important. But beyond that, any of us could add any other things, and then we're talking about pages of information. So,
well, and I'd just follow up and say, you know, if it's important to somebody, it's important to somebody that they want it in history, you have a right to say that. And, you know, some people don't like to have what they say written down, because they're held accountable for that years later. So I'm okay with what I say. I'll be held accountable for what I say. And if I, you know, if I see that, and in fairness to Stephanie, half of what Nancy gets comes from me. I can type it out. It would take me 6 hours to do it. So I just talk to Stephanie and say, hey, rather than both of us sending it, why don't you, you know, you can just send it. So these are not all coming from Stephanie. Not
you know. Stephanie's pretty, you could get that one to yourself.
She can type faster than I can speak, and she certainly can type faster than I can.
I can type really fast.
So,
don't call me, Drew. I'm not typing. So,
yeah, I know. That's why I don't. So.
Thank you.
So do you want to summarize?
Yeah, that? So again, what I heard, vote critical, capture the vote, capture the statement after the vote. But when it comes to discussions, others, board reports, it's really more important around the topic. Give a summary of that topic, but get in, get out, and move on, is what I'm hearing the consensus of the board.
Mm-hmm. If there's, to Kurt's point earlier, if there's a question that was posed, or there's a follow-up, for instance, that a community member made, and that's in the kind of the context of a discussion, then you know, that's a context setter, and I get that.
But we have a process in place,
right.
Mm-hmm. As Kurt said, that anybody can bring something back up. So that's where we'll be at. All right. Action items.
All right. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, you're good.
Moving things. All right. Under action items, the consent agenda. Are there any items board members would like removed from the consent agenda to be considered separately? And again, I want to clarify, we had a corrected agenda because we've moved the September 14th, 2015 regular meeting minutes from our regular business meeting open to our superintendent recommendation. So that's already removed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Hearing none, may I have a motion to approve the consent? I'm sorry.
I pull the personnel report.
Our blue sheet. Here.
Our blue sheet. I just had a question, and I apologize, but this has changed.
Okay.
All right. Well, we'll pull that, Mrs. Moser.
And Lori went home sick, so I'm hopeful I can. I can go ahead. Okay. No, go for it.
I have to wait.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I apologize. I'm breaking the process. Sorry.
That's changed. Let me finish. Okay. So,
thanks, ma'am.
So, may I have, anything else? Anybody else? Okay. May I have a motion to approve the consent agenda, which includes now item 2, finance, facilities, and operations, treasurer's report, investment schedule, monthly revenue / expenditure summary report. I'm sorry, I missed one. Resignations under human resources.
Yep.
And that'll be on personnel also, so that's removed as well. Let me just state that. Monthly revenue expenditure summary report, item D, summary of bills and payroll, vandalism report, disposal of surplus property, the 2015-16 FOIA report, school district payment order, September 5th, 2015 through September 22nd, 2015. Item 3, other matters, board meeting minutes, September 14th, 2015, regular meeting, closed session. May I have a motion?
Motion.
Second.
Okay, roll call.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Boczynski?
Yes.
Mr. Buckle?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. So I'll move to the items that were removed. May I have a motion to approve the human resources consent agenda item, personnel report, employment recommendations, resignations as presented.
Motion.
Second.
Okay, discussion. Stephanie?
I was just curious. This wasn't on our scope report we got, so I apologize. Couldn't ask it in advance, but it looks like we moved someone from an ESL bilingual aide to an ESL teacher, and I was wondering if this is a new position, like changing from being an aide to a teacher.
Thank you. I got a life support out here.
So, I mentioned she spoke that extended learning position with the Title I grant. Do we have to get a new aide for that?
A new aide for the aide position,
which is that new aide in other classes.
It creates a vacancy, and I think they'll still check numbers. I'm not sure she was targeting a specific.
That was my guess, what that was, but I just wanted to know.
Yeah. No. Thank you.
Okay, anything else on that? Okay, roll call, please.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Boczynski?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Buckle?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. Okay, item B, superintendent's recommendations. The first is approval of the September 14th, 2015 regular meeting minutes. May I have a motion to approve the amended August 10th regular meeting minutes as presented?
September 14th.
I'm sorry, that date didn't get changed, sorry. In my script, sorry. May I read it again. Approval of September 14th, 2015 regular meeting minutes. May I have a motion to approve the amended September 14th, 2015 regular meeting minutes as presented? And those are the ones we received today from Stephanie in the email.
What you're moving right now is the September 14th minutes.
Without amendments. Yes. I have the amendment. Okay. Okay.
Motion.
Second.
Discussion.
I guess I'll start the discussion.
Yep.
The corrections. I don't know. Should I just walk through me? Maybe you can press up to that best way to go about this.
Yeah, we have, Nancy provided also this sheet, which has the red line, or the changes in there, which is...
You're good.
Casual phone.
That's right.
Nancy, what would be best for you?
So if we go through Mrs. Clark's email, the area, so the first thing she commented on was the consent agenda.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe if you want to take those point by point... And you could make a decision.
So, to
each one.
I think I'm right now, right here.
I'm going to do my very best.
Or we can bring them back next time. And
we'd like to get them done right here and right now if we can. If we can. If it gets to be too much wordsmithing, then we will.
If you can come to agreement on the changes proposed, then we can approve them now through an amended motion.
Correct.
If not, we can table them and correct them and bring them back.
Correct.
With this one, the first point was the action item for the consent agenda.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the middle of page 4 of the minutes. Really, just the last paragraph there, I didn't think, it didn't really capture what happened. It said prior to proceeding, the board discussed the process of reviewing, suggesting changes and amendments, and approving the meeting minutes. And I know we kind of came away with that after the meeting, but I don't know that we had the discussion after the meeting. I just thought, since there was no second motion on the amended minutes, we made a motion to the original minutes, and we voted on that. And that
what they captured, and I thought, is that really more just actually what happened should be captured for historical purposes?
Right.
Was all I was thinking.
So part of that was my error in when we pulled the minutes and the amended ones, and when there wasn't a second, that the what happens is that the original minutes revert back to it. But what I didn't do was call a motion, and those minutes were not on the agenda, so we couldn't go back and approve those. I know this is convoluted and confusing, but I think that's probably why I did it, because I was confused they weren't on the agenda. So that's, I think, part of what you're picking up. So that needs to be captured, and part of it is, this is the question, do you capture something that didn't occur because it couldn't, because they weren't there, or do you capture something that occurred even with the fact that the minutes weren't a part of it? So I would, I think I'm erring on the side of creating an accurate depiction of it. So.
So we could put in a statement that kind of captures that, says that following the lack of movement of motion, Mrs. Nelson made a motion to approve the original August
2015
and reflect the vote. And then maybe make a note stating that, it was later determined that this procedure was an error.
Right, and because the minutes were not on the agenda to be voted on. Right.
Right.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. I would rather reflect it accurately, even though it didn't happen. I think we should put that in. Yeah.
His statement, Stephanie, and I'll be honest with you, I know that that conversation happened. I probably just assumed it happened there. Carolyn's not here to double check if there were happens. So I just assumed it happened somewhere.
Well, I know that we did talk about. I mean, I did ask meeting with Mrs. Mope when she returned. So that's accurate.
I don't recall at the meeting us talking about it, but maybe.
Well, discussed is maybe is a word that you would assume, but it was a full blown discussion. I think it was. It was discussed that we should review that, hence the request to meet and actually do what we ended up doing. Okay. Nancy, does that make sense? I don't want to go too far ahead of you.
Do you want to leave that statement there in the minutes? In that spot in the minutes, is that where it happened?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, there wasn't a discussion. I think what Stephanie's saying is it wasn't this full-blown board discussion. But it was discussed that we should review, suggest changes, look at how we approve them, and then the suggestion was made by me to meet with Mrs. Mope when she returned.
You could put that in your note, because it really didn't happen in the meeting. It was more sent.
No, I think
it did.
Yeah, it did. but to your point, Stephanie, not a full blown board discussion. Yeah. Tell us
prior
you're ready.
To proceeding the board, there was discussions on the process of reviewing suggesting changes, amendments, improving the meeting minutes. Mrs. Nelson suggested making a meeting with the board recording secretary for their clarification, placing the topic on the next agenda.
Yeah, I think that's a more that's a fairer description. It wasn't a board discussion like we would maybe typically have one, so okay.
The next item, resolution for construction change order.
For this one, which is on page 5, the second paragraph, it just says Ms. Clark agreed with Mr. Buckle's statement, which is correct. But since this is a resolution I voted no on, I felt it was important to add that I didn't feel the action item was properly vetted over 2 weeks since the discussion and vote were happening on the same night, and that was my concern. So,
add that statement.
That was.
I'm fine with that because because it's clarification around a vote. Yeah, I'm fine with that personally.
I just find this process is going to be a bit tedious, but it's important to get it right, so I'm with you there. But if you put everything on and one person disagrees with one thing, somebody disagrees with one, or four of us disagree with one change, it's going to revert back to the original minutes. It's just, I really need to walk down the path so they understand it, I feel, because somebody might have missed, not like the first one. So they're not voting for the first one. Somebody might not like the second change, so then they're going to vote no. And if somebody they like the first one, they like the third one, but they don't like the fourth one, they're going to vote no. So you end up with no votes. I mean, does everybody agree where this goes? I mean,
yes.
It's okay to get no vote.
No, I know, but if you guys, here's what I know. I like the first one.
We may never approve minutes ever again.
We know, but we'll get the minutes approved originally, because everybody will say, okay, the way they originally drafted, I approve. I mean, my comment here is more respectfully that if I didn't feel that I wanted to get the four in and the one like everybody's like saying no, then I'd take the one out. You know, but
that's why we're having a discussion. We're adults having a discussion.
What's the most important thing to reflect?
As long as we understand that's where it's going.
I mean, I think that's the whole purpose of this.
Okay. And I suspect that as the process goes forward, Nancy will get a better feel for this. I mean, this is the first time. And, you know, board work, it can get kind of messy.
I'm fine with it. No, I'm good. I think you're kind of mentally moving us forward.
Okay, let's go.
Sorry.
Any other comments?
Yep. And some of it's in here. So the next one I had was under enrollment report. Uh-huh. Honestly, I mean, in looking at it, I don't think it's critical, but it captured some of the questions that were asked, but not all of them. I'm okay with not putting that in there. It was just because some of the questions were captured, I'm okay with leaving that out and scratching that. Mm-hmm.
Just to clarify, are we keeping it in or taking it out?
Taking it out.
Let's scratch that. The community's task force felt it was important to include that we did ask about information that was shared at the task force, since the DOE wasn't informed in advance of it, we weren't supposed to talk at the task force. And Erica had shared given us the script that she shared. I felt that that was important to capture a question before. Mm-hmm.
So this is an example of my comment earlier, which is around when there's a statement in here, then naturally, on this one in particular, I would want to add another couple of sentences to then clarify. So if we keep this in, then I would add the following. Dr. Gordon explained that he and Mrs. Krabiel asked Mrs. Nelson to Mrs. Nelson as board president and having an 8-year history on the board, read the facilities history script developed by Mrs. Krabiel. Mrs. Nelson distributed the script to board members so that there's clarification that there was a response to Kurt's question, which is fair, but I just wanted to close it up.
But the one thing that I would say, just for clarification for me, would you normally then have sent it to Nancy during the day instead of doing it right now, or...
No, I personally don't feel the need to have that kind of clarification. I think this starts to do the verbatim that I'm talking about. But if the board feels that it's important to keep that on there, then I would want to bookend it with that so that there's clarification that it was responded to, because I feel like the response is missing.
So let's take one at a time. Do we have consensus on the community task force red line?
Of leaving that on there?
Of leaving that on, yeah. The Mr. Buckles asked. Do you include that?
Mm-hmm. I don't think it's required. I think it's on the audio, what we're starting to do is keep the transcript. And then
okay.
I don't.
Well, the transcript, again, would be what I said. I'm sure that I said that in many more words than is written here. So that would be a transcript. When it's down to a sentence, which I believe that's just one sentence, I never speak in one sentence. It's going to be three or four sentences. So
keep it.
So she sent it down to me. So it's not verbatim.
I'm going to go with the spirit of what we discussed, which was on voting ones, to get a little more robust, get the feeling, on discussion ones, not give this verbatim. So I'm following the theme, but you know, at certain times, I do look down the list here, so if something was missed totally, you know, I think more of the one I look down is the clarification on Stephanie's one on the last one, if I want to jump to the last one.
Okay.
I think that was more about
Others?
Right. I just gave the example of reading that. I again, I'm erring on the side of votes and the importance of that. So I don't believe that this is necessary. I think the fact that there's provided an update, and people interested, again, there's an audio and a video, mm-hmm. and I would refer to that. So I don't feel the need to keep it in, even with my rejoinder.
True.
I think if we're gonna include those, I want everyone's got them as well.
Okay, so on the first point, are you including it or not including it? Sorry, Ada.
Yeah, I don't see a problem with it.
Okay. Patrick?
But didn't we just, in the Roman report, that wasn't a budget thing, we're adding it, right?
No, we're not.
Oh, we're not.
We're not.
No. Oh, I thought we were.
First two we are, if we have both, the next two we're not.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I was just going to say, the community engagement plan, just to kind of point to that, it says that board members thank Mrs. Craig for her hard work and provided feedback and questions. And in my mind, I read that and I was like, okay, it's captured that we ask questions, so if someone wants to go listen to it and see exactly what we said, they could.
Mm-hmm.
But in the community task force, we did have some discussion as a board, and that in reading that summary, it doesn't really highlight that we had any questions or discussion. So I thought it was important to capture that, but mm-hmm. that's just my.
Well, I think this is a case of moving forward that we're also, while we have this conversation, I think we're giving some direction to Mrs. Moak around the type of things to listen for, so that maybe they're captured a little bit differently.
So, Patrick, where do you finish on this?
So I don't get to say conditional, like
I need to know. Yeah, if you want the red, then I have to go back and we need to figure out, do we add
if you put Erica's in, then you got to put mine.
Right. Well, we put yours in, then mine would be the
follow-up. No. All right, so we have no consensus on that one. We will not be adding that in.
Because it wouldn't make sense to not put mine
in. Yeah.
Well, here first.
Board report. Mr. Buchholz reporting out about Lincoln.
I mean, this was just another one. I mean, I guess it was discussed tonight. I mean, it'll be set in the minutes tonight. But I think it's important to capture some way that the question has been asked about the MOU. But I'm okay with leaving it if we can get it in. If it'll be in tonight's minutes, mm-hmm. there's discussion.
Because we discussed it, yeah.
The next one, I thought.
So we're not putting that one in there, Nancy?
Yeah.
Okay.
The next one for my board report. I had the two points from my board report. One was the curriculum night at Ben Franklin where they talked about the FLES summer camp, and I asked if mm-hmm. you consider offering summer camps for other subjects. That wasn't captured at all, and I thought that was, an important point that I thought should be captured or idea. And then the second thing to my board report was just a correction because the way it read, it made it sound like Hadley teachers were questioning her.
Yeah.
Those are my last two from my board.
So, board, you comfortable with the Mrs. Clark attended curriculum I read?
I mean, that could be shortened or changed. I tried to just make it as short as possible, but I'm not.
Dean's good.
I'm okay with that.
Good,
one.
Good, good.
Yeah.
We're good. Okay, we're good with the last two. We're good with the last two. Add those in.
May I have a motion to amend the September 14th, 2015 minutes as discussed?
Motion.
Second.
I'm sorry.
Motion, Mrs. Motion. Clark. Second, Mr. Escalante. Roll call.
Mr. Escalante.
Yes.
Mr. Buchholz.
No.
Mr. Ellis.
Abstain.
Mrs. Clark.
Yes.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Bochinski?
We're both absent.
Just vote, Joe.
It's getting late.
Yes, yes, I'm voting yes.
Yes, thank you.
What are the changes in
this? Okay. Next item under superintendent recommendations is approval of the August 10th, 2015 regular meeting minutes amended. At the September 14th, 2015 board meeting, these minutes were presented for approval and did not receive a second to the motion and therefore were not approved. We just discussed this a minute ago. Because of this and a correction in the minutes, they are now being presented for approval. May I have a motion to approve the amended August 10th, 2015 regular meeting minutes as presented?
Motion.
Second.
Okay. Mr. Alger, Mr. Ellis. Okay. So we should be looking at the amended minutes.
Right.
For August 10th.
Yeah.
And do you want to proceed as we've done?
Nancy, what would be the best way for you to capture this?
I mean, this just should be a roll call at this point, unless you have other discussion about these amendments. It's what you talked about
in the
last meeting. So if you have other comments, we can talk about that right now. Right now, we're at just a motion to approve the amended minutes.
These were as submitted in the August 24th meeting.
Mm-hmm. Well, these were as submitted as
September 14th.
These are the ones that are in the board book.
Well, I take that back, Mr. President. They were submitted both at the August 14th meeting and September 14th. They were tabled August 24th. They were brought back on the 14th. We are, right now, the motion on the floor is to approve the amended minutes, the red line version.
That were originally submitted on August 24th.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And there were three.
Right.
Pieces. There's one under superintendent recommendations, adoption of the 2015-16 budget. Am I looking at the correct minutes, Nancy?
Yep.
Okay. And I'm okay with that addition, as Stephanie noted her comment on the budget. Again, this is around taking vote. So that... Mm-hmm. That correction is fair. I mean, that's, you want that to be reflected in that way.
Any other comments? Okay.
At the end, under other, there is a description on the academic update, and I think this under other academic update follow up, and it starts with Karen Carlson provided, etc. And Stephanie included some extra verbiage. And again, this for me falls under once that's in there, then there's this natural follow on, which was a comment by Mr. Bochensky in terms of refuting some of the data that Mrs. Clark presented. But that's not reflected in here. So I would not approve this amended portion.
I didn't type that up, by the way. I did not type that up. That was what.
This is how. So how did this?
When we talked about it at the meeting, I had said I just thought it was important because the summary didn't really capture any of what I felt I had presented, and I said I could just attach my write up. And I know there was concerns with that, which I was okay with. I just said I was trying to save work and retyping it.
Right.
And I think the suggestion was Nancy just pulled out my key points and. Added those here, so I didn't. Mm-hmm. Type this.
Are you arguing Mr. Bochensky's statements?
No.
I don't know if that makes a difference, but this is not my.
Yeah, your version.
I'm okay with it, but I did not. I did not create the wording.
No, what I'm saying is,
I'll clarify.
What I'm saying is that to me, this is an example like the one that I gave before, which is when we have. There's detail like this in here, not the original summary from the unamended minutes. When I read that, I think to myself, and then there was follow-up, at least by Joe and others, in terms of discussing that. So then I have concern that we start to get much more specific in terms of, you know, this was said, then this was said, then this was said, and it becomes more of a, not a transcript, to your point, but more of a verbatim.
What this captured in my mind was just my main questions at the end that I asked. That's all this is capturing, the main questions that I asked.
Mm-hmm. And again, for reference, I think Steph is probably on the same page with me on this. You know, those kinds of things, again, we get stuff, you know, and it's natural. There's so many things coming, especially at staff. I mean, you get 3 months down the road. It's easy to go back and say, you know, what happened with this? And these questions were asked, and we didn't really get clarification. It's easy to look for rather than trying to go through the audio. You know,
can I make a suggestion to change?
Here, additional discussion, including identifying the success and failure program.
Right,
It captures that.
Right.
There,
so could I suggest just a word change, or maybe adding a word, and that is, I feel like where it says states that she believes these slides. Maybe what I'm stuck on is to clarify that this was data that you pulled yourself, that you captured, because what I think it might reflect inaccurately is that this was district data. But in fact, it was data that you pulled yourself and you created.
No,
it was district data. I pulled it from Sharon Carlson's presentation. I just put it in a different format.
Right, but you pulled data. You compiled data.
All I did was, in my presentation, I explained exactly where the data came from. I just consolidated it into one, like 8 pages of data into one. If you want, you can say that in there. But I didn't create my own data. I just consolidated the district's data into a...
Well, I think this discussion is...
A graph.
Is part of why I think this much detail, that we need to let people just listen to it and then capture the understanding for themselves.
Well, yeah, you have to explain why I gave some presentation to begin with. There has to be some explanation as to why I gave it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't capture that, then there's no explanation as to why I felt the need to put the information together and share it.
So let me clarify what I'm reading. Following this, Mrs. Clark reviewed data slides she presented. She, meaning you.
How about Mrs. Clark developed a chart? Going to your point,
Yeah.
I could say using district data.
That's fine. There you go. There we go. We got it.
That's
fine.
Then that's a clarification.
Mrs. Clark developed a chart.
It would be the second sentence.
Yeah.
Second sentence.
Following this, Mrs. Clark, instead of you, say, I developed.
We're going to need another motion, right?
A graph.
Yeah.
Yes, she'll walk us through it. I just want to have that clarified because I think the she and the she were confusing to me, and I want that. If it's going to be in writing, then I want to be clear.
The district data.
Yes.
Chart.
Okay. Anything else on that? Okay. And then the only other changes were just some corrections on who voted. Aye or nay,
mm-hmm.
And that's it.
So I need an amended motion,
mm-hmm.
to approve the amended August 10th minutes as discussed.
We don't need to close this out, this discussion?
That's what we're going to do right now.
Right now, okay. So may I ask for an amended motion for the approval of the August 10th, 2015 regular meeting minutes as presented this evening?
As discussed
and agreed upon this evening. Thank you, Nancy. May I have a motion?
Motion.
Second.
Okay. Roll call.
Mr. Ellis.
Yes.
Mrs. Clark.
Yes.
Mr. Elder.
No.
Mr. Escalante.
Sorry, I stepped out. I have to say.
Okay. Mr. Buckle.
Yes.
Mr. Bochinski.
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson.
Yes. All right. Thank you. Board policy revisions, second reading and adoption. At the September 14th, 2015 meeting, the board discussed the administration's recommendation of revisions to policies and or procedures as presented. These revisions are being recommended as a result of changes in Illinois or federal law or to reflect current policy and or practices. May I have a motion to approve the adopt the recommended revisions to policies and or positions as presented?
Motion.
Second.
Discussion. I just have a correction to the new board policy 885 under community relations. And in the second paragraph, it reads, this is the community relations non-school sponsored groups.
Mm-hmm.
So second paragraph, non-school sponsored groups may, and there's a word missing here, I think it's attain, maybe, school sponsored status.
The second paragraph?
Yeah.
May apply for consideration as a school-sponsored club. Is that what you're talking about?
No, it's in the second paragraph here. I just feel like when I read this that it didn't flow. There was something missing. Non-school-sponsored groups may school-sponsored status. May what?
It used to say may apply for consideration as a school-sponsored club through
the
supplement.
The word is
may apply? It says non-school-sponsored groups may apply for consideration,
mm-hmm.
as a school-sponsored club.
Okay.
That's the one you're
talking
about.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's apply.
On this one, so thank you. Yep. Thank you both. And just a word on that. Thank you for creating this policy. I think it's, you know, going to fine-tune some of what, you know, questions we've had before. So,
you're welcome.
All right. Anything else?
I wanted to just mention one thing. I meant to mention it last time, and I forgot. On 7/30/18, this is one that we changed. About administrative procedure open enrollment.
I'm sorry, Stephanie.
Oh, sorry. 7/30/18 for administrative procedure for open enrollment.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to mention that the original policy had 7 types of transfers,
mm-hmm.
and we eliminated number 6 and number 7. Which said 6 said a student needs a program that's not available at his or her current school of attendance but is available at another district school. 7 was to address his or her educational and or physical problems. A student needs a school environment that is not available at his or her current school but is available at another district school. We took those two out. Correct me if I'm wrong with this. We felt that the language was a little specific. And those specific needs might actually be discussed with the students that probably have an IEP or with their IEP team.
Right.
But I didn't want to eliminate, you know, if a parent did feel a concern about their placement, number 5 really can apply.
Mm-hmm. It captures it.
So
yeah.
It captures everyone. So I just wanted to mm-hmm. point that out. That
That's
even though
exactly what we talked about.
Those two, so
it's streamlined.
Really number 5 can apply yeah. to anybody. So just to
thank you. Anything else? Okay. A roll call.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
He stepped out.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Buckle?
Yes.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mrs.
Nelson? Yes. Annual review of closed session minutes. The board is required to semi-annually review all closed session meeting minutes and determine if the need for confidentiality still exists as to all or part of those minutes, may have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation to continue to keep closed session minutes from February 2015 through June 2015 closed.
Motion.
Okay. Discussion. This is the, again, these are the written minutes.
And this is what we do every year, twice mm-hmm. a year, I believe. Every 6 months, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there's a. We review the minutes in writing. If there's anything that we feel that a board feels could be opened, and then we would provide those. Otherwise, they there's we determine if confidentiality exists. If it doesn't, then we keep them closed.
Okay.
Any other comments? All right. Roll call.
Mr. Ellis. Mr. Alger.
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Buckle?
Yes.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. Discussion of closed session audio recordings. The board is also required to semi-annually review closed meeting audio recordings that are at least 18 months old and for which approved minutes of the closed meeting already exist. Please note the October 28, 2013 session was recorded properly. However, it was not transferred correctly from tape to CD, and as a result, the CD is blank. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation as presented?
Motion.
Second.
Okay, and discussion.
This is on the instruction.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So I had some comments.
Sure.
I'll be voting no on the instruction. I'll explain my decision now. There's a particular date that the minutes have been held up for that Mrs. Clark and I felt warranted further review. That review came from the attorney. We suggested at one point that maybe Lisa Madigan's office should take a look at it for essentially review purposes, not to get anybody into trouble, but the attorney's come back and said that through, I'm going to say for lack of a better term, a somewhat wishy-washy response to us, that there was no violation during this particular meeting, but that we should hold to a stricter process. Anyways, my concern here is that the district has
for a long time, and I cite a couple of things. Loosely run what we're talking about in the closed session, and getting things approved that should be vetted publicly. And I cite the assistant position, their assistant principal positions. There was a shift. There was a shift in one part of personnel, and they went in under personnel, right under personnel. The shift occurred with one position, but there was a position added. That's a budgetary item, and that position was added in closed session. So that wasn't until it was approved that it was actually talked about. Those kinds of things should be vetted as a board in public. I believe the length of day was, again, tied to the teacher contract. I've said this several times. The length of day was a discussion that should have occurred with the public. It affected everyone that had children in this town. And it should have been vetted that way. And if the town agreed to it, the customer, the people that pay the bills around here agreed to it, then you could go in and negotiate with the teachers. But we didn't do it that way. We loosely tied it in closed session, I believe, to continue to move these types of things forward without getting any pushback from the community. We also added PBL coaches. They were added in closed session. And there's a whole discussion around these things that were never talked about publicly. But we talked about, and we found this out when the budget discussion occurred, but the schools' budgets were cut. They had the PBL coaches. So there was a shift in money. So we were saving money at the grade schools. We're not sure what was cut at the grade schools, but we saved money at the grade schools and shifted that money to the PBL coaches. That all should have been talked about and vetted in the public. So, for these reasons, I am not going to vote yes to destroy these tapes, because I actually disagree with our attorney. So.
Thank you. Other comments?
I mean, I will add that I had asked for the review of the tapes for the same reason. I would like it to be learning opportunity so we can try to be more transparent with how we're operating. And I feel like this one is a little bit gray, and there are discussions that we can have that could be loosely tied to personnel or mid-year reviews and things like that. And not saying that those aren't tied together, but at the same time, I think as a board we should be recognizing after the fact, okay, are these discussions that we should also be moving to the regular board meeting at some time to inform the public of what we're thinking, what we're moving forward with. And in my mind, there's no reason that can't be done. And I feel like there's been discussions that have happened that haven't been moved out to the public. I mean, I'm not going to repeat all the examples that Kurt gave, but there's no reason if we were operating transparently that those discussions shouldn't have been moved out to the public. I mean, like I know, for example, the first I heard of cutting our budgets at the elementary school level was when we were looking at the budget this year, and I found out that we had changed the logic for how we do the budgets, and not saying it's bad, but we changed it to a per pupil basis to decide what the budget's like the school. And that was the first I heard of it this year. And so I think that those are things that would be good to make sure we're discussing and just keeping the public informed of what we're moving forward with, looking to do. So I had hoped we could use some of this to better the way we operate transparently. So I'm going to vote no as well.
Other comments?
I disagree with both Stephanie and Kurt on how things aren't brought to the public. And the closed sessions, conversations, the topics and everything are discussed in closed session appropriately, and I don't think Todd's, our lawyer, the district lawyer's opinion could be considered wishy-washy. He's been an attorney for years. I'd stand him up to any attorney that would support District 41. So take umbrage on the term wishy-washy with Todd's judgment on what was taken to him. But the practice of this organization in the district is to take all topics to discussion, either through the finance facilities, policies, and then through the full board meeting, we have every opportunity to discuss those things. We take several steps over the 2 years that I've been here to try to be, including tonight, in terms of changing the agenda to make sure the public is as aware as possible. So I disagree with both Kirk and Stephanie's sentiments.
Other board members? Other comments? Okay.
I would, can I just
say something first, Kurt, before you respond?
Yep.
I would also agree. I think the term, I think the term wishy-washy is inaccurate, and I know that Todd, you know, was reached out to on this specifically because of the concern of what you've just discussed, and he spent a significant amount of time also reviewing this, listened to the entirety of the meeting, went back and pinpointed, Stephanie and Kurt were asked to identify what those minutes were. He asked for that specifically so he could go back in and really fine-tune and listen, which he did more than two times, so several times to make sure he was listening for that. And what was not wishy-washy is that the outcome of the conversation, and again, your intention is let's use this as an opportunity to get better. And certainly, I think that's the intention of this board. So having the conversation is important. You may disagree with the outcome, but I believe that his intention was to provide for us an opportunity to tighten up as we talked about. So that would be my comment. We have a quick follow-up from you?
Yep. Well, from the Wooden Trust Escalante session.
Okay.
If we follow the path, Todd Faulkner is the board's attorney. So he's paid by the board. The board
He's paid by the district.
By the district.
Mm-hmm.
He's paid by the district. Mm-hmm. The board has the sole discretion to fire the attorney. The board is controlled by a certain owner. It's not controlled by the people that brought the concern. So, in my opinion, he's compromised, which was why we argued at the time that this should have been turned over to Madigan's office, not to the school district's attorney, who is compromised. So when we say that you could pin him up against any attorney, I'm sure he's a great legal mind. But in the end, he's collecting a paycheck from this school district, which is controlled by a certain element, and that makes him compromised.
You're calling Todd Faulkner's ethics into question?
Yeah.
A stalwart of this community? You're calling his ethics?
He's certainly compromised.
I take no.
Yeah, you better be careful.
You are.
I would like that on the record.
He doesn't.
I'd like that.
Wow. Todd Faulkner, you're putting his ethics.
Okay, listen. Let's clarify. This is Kurt's opinion.
And I can't even believe, as the superintendent, you'd be arguing with one particular board member.
I'm just shocked that you're calling Todd Faulkner's ethics.
I'll argue that, Kurt.
You can argue whatever you want to argue.
I totally disagree with you, and if there's going to be a question of meeting minutes, so there's crystal clarity to that point, Kurt specifically said, and he's okay with it.
You can bank it.
That he questions the ethics of the district attorney.
No, I didn't question. I said he could be compromised. Don't put words in my mouth. He's compromised.
Take roll call, please.
Mr. Elder.
Yes.
Mr. Escalante.
Yes.
Mr. Ellis.
Yes.
Mrs. Clark.
No.
Mr. Wojcinski.
Yes.
Mr. Buckle.
No.
Mrs.
Nelson. Yes. Thank you. All right, we have some board reports. I know that things have started to heat up with meetings and activities. Any board reports?
Thank you for attending the meeting. I couldn't attend.
Oh,
appreciate that, so I don't have a board report.
Yeah. I have three quick ones. I am, just for clarity's sake, for Nancy, too, I am going ahead to use that simple board report that I put together. I mean, you're welcome to use it. The intention, again, was in order to there to be some continuity or consistency in terms of what we're reporting out as board members. So, Nancy, I have a copy of each of these for you that I'll give to you after the meeting. So the first one is CIT, the Continuous Improvement Team. The date of the meeting was September 17th. summary of the key issues were the that there was a subcommittee of CIT that looked at priorities and feedback among the three teams that roll up into the continuous improvement team. So professional development for staff and faculty, building leadership teams, one at each of the schools, and then Team 21. So discussion on the feedback process, interest in recommendations for professional development that was actually gathered at the start of the school year, so it was good to hear that during the August kickoff time and institute time. Lori Campbell specifically looked for ideas and suggestions on where they're headed with professional development. There's some structure in place, but wanting to constantly bring that in so that they can make sure they individualize that. Actions to be taken, culture and climate survey rollout, as we heard tonight, rollout in October. Next CIT meeting will be a review of professional development for teacher and staff response so that we can follow up on that. And then the building leadership teams will provide some input and feedback with regard to their plans and next steps for this year. Quickly, the other board report is the LEND meeting. And I just want to encourage people to go to that if you can. They're held typically at CASE or District 89, which is on Park and Butterfield. This meeting was last Friday, September 25th. Dr. Gordon was able to go as well. There was some discussion of Park. The Illinois State Board of Education, ISBE, has provided on their website some descriptors of how they're basing their level descriptor. So the 1 through 5 that we saw in the Daily Herald that said, 70%, and then they gave that picture, is actually based on a point system that starts at 650 up to 800, so it almost sounds like an SAT type of thing. So anyway, that information is in there. Dr. Smith, who's the new ISBE superintendent, said that obviously Park is going to set a new baseline and there will be changes to the test for 2015-16. We'll reset that baseline again, so we're dealing with a moving target. In terms of budget, K-12 budget updates, general state aid has been finalized at 92%. I'm looking at Becky. I think that came through, but that was announced. And the bottom line is for GSA is that no district, it was identified, will lose more than $226 in change per student this year. So they're trying to keep it as level as possible, with the understanding that GSA is actually not kept up with, the state funding is not kept up with inflation, et cetera. This was interesting, and I think, again, something for Finance Committee as well. District 87, Dr. Larson was there, and with the building that's going on with the new science edition, they are looking at money that was set aside under the previous administration. It's $500 million in what are called qualified school construction bonds. And these dollars are kind of, I shouldn't qualify it, they're sitting there in limbo because superintendents can't get a direct answer on how can we use some of those dollars. And so there'll be some follow-up on that through LEND and some of the other agencies. But I know that Dr. Larson is and Chris McClain are looking at that as well. And then finally, Forest Glen PTA, which I sat in for Dean, which was September 15th. Want to mention, reminder, we have ribbon cutting this coming Saturday at Forest Glen at 9 a.m. And FYI, that is also the homecoming staging area for Glenbard West. but when asked, should we move it, should we switch it with Churchill, Mrs. Hornacek, principal at Forest Glen, said no, because they've invited a lot of Forest Glen alumni, and they're also alumni of West, and they're going to meet, and so we're going to probably have some other folks there that we might not normally have. So they're good with 9 o'clock. It's going to be a little crazy. Ride your bike. And then, so that's 9 o'clock, and then 11 o'clock for Churchill after that. Forest Glen, they have a We Are One campaign, which I asked them to explain to me, and they said, the description was this: now that Forest Glen, this is from the board, the PTA president, is all under one roof, we are one building, they are celebrating the start of the year together, and every child from pre-K all the way up through, fifth grade, every teacher, staff member, are getting a T-shirt with a logo that they designed to capture the event, and they've asked Mrs. Crabiel to go and figure out a way to do like a panoramic picture of them that they want to frame, so that's kind of neat. Walk to School Day is October 7th. And they have a new drama program this year, which I always like to suggest. You know, we try and get to as much as we can, where they'll actually be doing a drama program similar to the other schools. So new chair for that, very excited about it. That's it. Any other board reports?
I went to SPAC, the meeting Monday night.
That's the special, the parent advisory committee.
And they had Ms. Gallo was there representing the district, along with some other teachers, and Mr. Burke was there. And there were several concerns that were raised by parents, along kind of the lines of how much thought are we giving into special needs kids when we're making decisions. An example was the PBLs. There were a lot of questions about that. How much consideration are we giving to kids with in terms of their needs, with how they're trying to perform the PBLs? And they centered in all sorts of ranges from, kids with anxiety having to speak in front of people to, whether they're capable of even doing the PBL or how they're modifying it. So the parents seemed to think that there wasn't much modification. They asked Ms. Gallo that question. She said they have thought about it. I disagreed with that, the first statement. I didn't think that we had a lot of thoughtful purpose to that whole thing. Again, I stated that it's just my opinion. But there were a lot of those kinds of concerns that were coming from them. And, so we may want to double back with them as a staff with, maybe attend the next meeting again and see if there's any more questions that can be answered.
Mm-hmm. I'm the board liaison for that, and I reached out to Shana, one of the co-chairs, because the meeting was supposed to be on the 22nd, I think, a Tuesday, which I was able to go to, but then it moved to the 24th, but I had a meeting at the high school, so I couldn't go. So thank you, Stephanie, for going. I think you said you were going to go anyway, but being the board rep for that and for Kurt going as well. I'm scheduled to go to their October and November meetings, so I will be there for those. All right, and thank you for that.
I could bring this up.
Okay. Any other board reports? Joe?
I went to Ben Franklin on September 17th. It was attended by about 8 or 9 of the parents, along with the board members. There was, speaking of aspect of the presentation that day by Sharon Trevor. Which is very, very informational. So she was reaching out to the PCAs to do that. I thought that was a really good idea and good discussion. Samples, the principal was there as I was there. So we were there to answer questions and give little brief reports. Some of the discussion around Kirk really revolved around, was there enough time for lunchroom? His opinion was it was about 99% it's working for, 1%, the ones that are socializing and stuff, and that's just his, his views of being in the ground floor. That's mm-hmm. what he saw. Both he and I left an hour after the meeting, and the meeting continued, and Marty, she was there, and Lori was nice enough, she was at the meeting, she was nice enough to email me to say there was more discussion afterwards. Mm-hmm. So I called the president, Katie Prescott, and I guess the Q&A kind of started after Kirk and I left near the end of their meeting. Mm-hmm. You stay there for the whole thing, of course. In the morning for me, unfortunately, I had to get to another meeting. But I talked to her at length for a good hour and a half to discuss what she felt was there. And Paul, I think you know this because one of the results of this discussion, because Mr. Burke was there, is that at the next meeting, you and Karen will be there with me, and they changed the time to meeting and make it convenient for all of us. So I think that's good. Some of the discussion was the AP schedules. It was really revolving on that. There was some feeling that some of the kids were getting overwhelmed, and it was good. She said it was very good. There was concern. And she had talked to you already and reached out to her very quickly, and she appreciated that. And then, forget when the next meeting is, after the 24th meeting? It's at the end of October.
Somewhere right there.
You're going to be there. So I think that was
was a really good response to, you know, parents getting together and talking and going and getting issues.
Again, good at the PTA because there are more people here.
Exactly. Katie did a wonderful job running the meeting, and I appreciated the hour and a half she spent with me on the phone and gave me the detail. And I said, I appreciate Marty reaching out to me.
To give you that heads up, yeah. Good. Thank you. Okay.
Did you mention that there was a town hall meeting coming on up?
No, no. What I mentioned was that they reached out to...
I didn't know if you mentioned it, but there is a town hall meeting. There were enough concerns, right, that they...
I think we're having the PTA meeting. I don't have that town.
I think it's going to be the PTA meeting that they're calling it, like a more of a town hall. They were, I think the word town hall meeting is going to be thrown around,
Yeah, and they moved into the meeting some more people to make it.
Aren't they also? Didn't they also talk about doing a survey at Ben Franklin as well?
I did not get that at PTA meeting. Now, I was only there for the first hour. We certainly could have talked about it in a second.
Thank you. All right. Items under other. I have a quick one. There's a school law update workshop in Oak Brook on October 7th. Now, I know it's the day after the DuPage division dinner for IASB, so it might be, I know that I can't go on the 6th because I work that night, but I am going to go to this because it's looking at... law update for the year, and then also some of the finance stuff. So it's from 4 to 7. It's free to board members and administrators, superintendents, and it's at Hamburger University. So that I know that email went out to everybody. If you're interested, I'm happy to share that information with you. It's 4 to 7 on Wednesday the 7th. Who's able to attend the IASB dinner? Is anybody going? Dean, are you? At that?
I thought
it was the 6th. I think you registered for that, right? And Paul, you're attending as well. Yeah. Anybody else going? All right. Let's see. So the last thing I want to do is I want to distribute the board norms, and I'll give a little background or just context for this. I want to thank board members for the work that they did. This was starting on August 20th with our flip chart papers. Hand these out, I should do that for everybody. And then I was charged with organizing those and just pulling like directly off from the sheets, and then I sent those out. So we have the norms in front of us. I want to note disagreement on norm number 4. If you have it in front of you, with these words, being aware of time, by Kurt and Stephanie. I sent these out on the 4th, the 14th, and then at the board meeting on the 14th, and I know Drew, I sent those to you also because you were out of town, to get any feedback by September 21st. I didn't receive any additional comments or concerns. Kurt did reconfirm his disagreement with that particular line in the norm, as Stephanie did as well. Let me just read it out loud. Have an effective discussion, being aware of time while inviting new comments from board members. So there's no other feedback, concerns, or questions. The rest of the edits went forward that I had brought in and adapted those. So as it stands, these are our norms. And I want to make one context piece on number 4, and I wrote this in an email to Stephanie and I think to Kurt too, and that is there's no intention to cut people off. I know that might be part of the concern. Certainly we haven't done it tonight. It's not been our MO. I don't see that changing. And the other norms actually support that issue, so I don't really see it. I don't see it as being an issue other than creating that sense of awareness of for our community members, length of the meeting, et cetera, as something to be aware of. So here's our norms. I want to thank everybody for doing this. I think the spirit of them are excellent. We did nice work on the 20th to get these started.
So the norms are basically a majority rule. We don't agree with the one norm. Because I guess
We don't vote on them.
It's a consensus.
Really, it's just
it's a spirit of it. It's not the intention to cut it off, but just to be conscious of time. Yeah. All right? All right, thank you. Thank you for this. All right, upcoming meetings. Go ahead, Kurt. My apology.
So
I actually had one. I had two. Mrs. Schweikoffer commented, so I wanted to comment back. I would totally agree with Mrs. Schweikoffer that differentiation has been taught before and after. And I said that. I think I actually made the comment that, you know, since we were in a cave and stone, your teachers were differentiating. So I never said that they weren't. Maybe I was wrong, but that was correct, unfortunately. But you made the comment that locked in, and you're right about that. But the reality is you stood in front of people, in front of residents, and told them that wind time was important. You did. I didn't. You did. So you can't have it both ways. You can't say we did it before. Now we're locking them in, so we're going to go back to what we did before. So I take issue with that because, again, we're back to the accountability piece. You were up in front of the crowds. You were saying that this model was good and wind time was part of that. And now we've taken it out. Again, like I said to Dr. Gordon, it's good we've taken it out. Our teachers will meet these. But the reality is you stood in front of people and told people that this was a good thing. And you sold it for the district. And you can't now come back and rewrite history and act as if you never were part of it.
Kurt, so. Point of order. I don't think that's what she was saying. She was trying to clarify what that was. All right. Thank you.
Well, again, okay.
Another?
Yep. I didn't invite her to speak. So.
Go ahead.
She has a right to. Second thing, when Stephanie and I attended Franklin to look at the lunches, we also went down to the special ed rooms. We had some concerns about some of that, you know, some around the bathroom piece, which we had a lot of discussion about. We were in that bathroom, I think probably, I know we're maybe going to be redoing it next year, but that bathroom is pretty tight. And so, I think staff should maybe go back and take a look at that and see when we're looking at wheelchairs and that kind of stuff. It's a difficult place to be. So I'd ask the staff maybe revisit that. The other question...
Just on that piece, that was never set to be ADA compliant. That was set to have basically a changing room in an area on capital projects that will be coming your way in two weeks, looking at Dave right around there. That is a... But that... Okay. That restroom will not be changed. The one that has the drywall on it, we would do the construction to the other bathroom that, in my words, have a Jack and Jill that have entrance for both those classrooms. That would be the one that we would be looking at to have the ADA compliant. Okay. But we never talked about it being ADA compliant. It was really about that changing room and ensuring their kids were not having to go downstairs to the nurse's office to be changed. So just wanted to be clear on that.
Still pretty tight.
But they still didn't have the proper equipment in there to function as a change.
It's still, yeah, you're right. We have it was ordered long ago. I wish it were here. I'm not sure when it will be here.
They ordered it in June, I think.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
So you're on top of it.
Yeah. Well.
So
yeah.
Sorry.
I'm not sure when the decision was exactly made to bring the kids back. Happy that they're back, but hopefully we ordered them exactly when we were making the decision. And it does bring me back to, been looking through the budget, specific to, special ed, but, I'm a little confused. And again, this one, Paul, you could.
I'll get back to you. Okay.
So please ask it. We brought 10 kids back. And as far as I can tell, we didn't really see a staff increase. Mm-hmm. We brought 10 kids back that are probably needier than the kids that we've had with no staff increase. I think the savings was around $200, so or $200,000. So I'm curious as to if I'm reading this correctly, and again, maybe I'm wrong, but I'm just asking. The $200,000, I guess, I'm wondering where did that go? And then how are we okay operationally with no staff increase when we brought 10 kids back? So
I believe Mrs. Gallo addressed that once, but I'll make sure that we address it again on how
so
the staffing. Yeah, but we'll make sure that's...
I think it was asked when we had the round table, but
yeah. Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, I'll make sure that we have that back here.
So
thank you,
Kurt.
Thank you. Anybody else?
I have a couple of things. I mean, I guess I just want to add to what Kurt was saying about the special ed rooms and the changes we made there. And I think my concern of what I think it's great that we're bringing kids back to our district. That's, you know, one of the main things we should be focusing on. But I want to make sure if we're bringing kids back, we're providing them with the same or better facilities than they came from. And it's real disappointing to me when you go in and we knew in the spring when they probably had their IEP meetings that they'd be coming back to our district, and you know, you go in a couple weeks into school and they still don't really have the proper equipment and facilities for these kids. It just, there's a lot of, I think, demands that are placed on staff that we probably can't even comprehend, and I think that we need to take all these things into account and be providing the best education possible to all kids in our district. And I have a real concern that that's not necessarily happening. But
so I'll make sure Michelle's here at the next board meeting to address those issues, because those pieces I'll make sure Michelle's here to address those pieces for us.
In addition to that, it kind of ties in with a couple different things, with the SPAC update, the Ben Franklin update. I wanted to touch a little bit on the schedule, and maybe we can talk about it more at another meeting. I know you mentioned it in your superintendent's report that, you know, there's concerns, we're monitoring it, but I think that the concerns are greater than we're really talking about here. I mean, the Ben Franklin meeting, I know from being a Ben Franklin parent and talking to people there, parents are pretty upset about the schedule, to the point that, you know, they were having their meeting, the PTA meeting, and you and Kirk left. They went and got another administrator to come back in, so an administrator could hear.
Just the record on that, Mr. Burke was there too.
And I think he left. I think he left and they went back and got him. Mm-hmm. But I'm just saying they knew to go get an administrator so they could come and hear their concerns.
Stephanie, can I make a suggestion? I want you to finish, but this is I think a pretty broad and deep conversation. My sense is that you're looking for some feedback from Paul and his staff, and not a high level conversation. But could I make the recommendation to put this on the agenda? And
we can put it on the agenda. I just want to just capture some points, because I feel like there is concerns out there. And I feel like we're downplaying them, and I just want to be realistic about them. That there are concerns at Franklin, and to the point that the parents asked to have, I think they had called it a town hall meeting, now it would be a PTA meeting, but asked to have a meeting with their administrators to try to get some questions answered. They invited Paul and Karen to come to answer those questions. This is the PTA that is driving this. I know I've been asked, they're composing their own survey at Franklin. They're asking parents for questions to put on their survey because they have that level of concern of what's happening in their school and the decisions and how they're impacting their kids. At the SPAC meeting, we were hearing the same thing about the schedule and the changes and the impact on kids. And I think that there's a lot of kids really struggling in our school district. And I mean, I've heard that teachers have approached the administration to say that, you know, this schedule is not conducive to what's best for kids. Maybe that's not happening, but I want us to be honest and really address it, because I think it's a big concern out there. And
well, let's put it on the agenda.
I think it should be.
Okay. Yeah.
Should we put it on the agenda before the Ben Franklin meeting?
When is the next Ben Franklin PTA meeting?
I can look it up, but it's
I think you're accurate.
24th.
I think it's right around.
Yeah, our next meeting is up. Well, I'm going to go over
the only reason I asked it, because I think it's a great idea. I mean, I talk to Katie about it a lot. To me, I almost thinking just what's best from a business standpoint is, you get there as suited to a town hall, if that's what it is, but this PTA.
Yeah.
It's just the right way for all this to happen. I mean, they talked about this at the meeting, and Katie talked to them. This is what PTAs are for. They start with Kirk. You know, he's at the building level, and then it kind of reaches up. So to me, I think it should be an agenda item, but I would want that you get have that meeting first. You and Karen are there. Then we can get more feedback when we're talking about it.
Okay.
From your experience.
So when is that meeting? The 24th?
We believe it's the October 20th.
It's 22nd. Okay, so we could actually put this on the agenda for the 26th.
Yes.
And then we'd have more feedback on that. Mm-hmm. That makes sense?
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Okay. Two other quick things. Sorry. I did have a question. I know we sent out the letter from the president today, and we got an email as well today from a community member who had asked, who had expressed interest in Team 21. And I guess,
mm-hmm.
and maybe this can be a discussion for later, but, you know, I think one of the questions is, if community members are interested in these things, is there a process? Is there an application? How can they get involved? Because I had passed along a name to Paul, a community mm-hmm. member interested in Team 21, and I know they never heard anything about it, reached out to Paul, and come to find out, well, someone else has already been picked, and this person never even had a chance to really say, oh, what, this is why I'm interested. And I guess, in my mind, if Team 21 is really the one team, well, I think BLT also has
mm-hmm.
fun.
Really
Team
important.
21 is the district committee that has mm-hmm. parent representation, and there's two. Want to make sure that, are we just picking who we want on there, or are we making sure we have different viewpoints represented, and giving everyone a chance that's interested to be involved in that.
And making sure that other board members have that opportunity, because you're 2 years ago, you recommended Shayna Fredericks, and I selected her. So I think it's important that others are also giving some of those pieces. Yeah, so...
If somebody comes to us and says, how do you do it? And they pass the name along to you, at some point I think we should at least reach out to that person and say, we didn't select you. That's the point.
I guess I didn't realize that you're already working with people and having those conversations.
No, no, no.
See, Paul, here's the difference. And I'm going to explain this to you.
No,
here's the difference. No, because I'm sorry, the attitude coming off of that is wrong.
You know,
do not, no. Here's the difference. Here's the difference.
Excuse me.
People approach us from the community. They see things. We write a letter that talks about all these great committees. I'm not sure why we sent the letter, but as long as my name wasn't on it, I was fine with it going out. But having said that, they ask about these things. What are we told to do? Direct it to staff. Stephanie directed it to staff, and there was absolutely no follow-up. We didn't go out and solicit business for this. Someone that knows Stephanie asked about that. So the inference from the superintendent that I'd like to, hey, Mr. Elder's welcome to give you a name. If somebody approaches him, anybody else, I have no problem with that. But that's
sounds
how that came about.
I apologize if it came across that way.
All right. Thank you.
I mean, I just think it's great that we're communicating Team 21 to the public, but we've given them no information mm-hmm. if they want to get involved.
Right. So the intention behind that, I got received edits from Dean that were incorporated. Stephanie also asked some questions about it, and the intention was to include the link. We included the link on there. And what's important about this, if I can give a little bit of context, is this is to Kurt's point, too, this is a contract, right, between AFSCME and DIA to have these. This language was very specific in terms of engagement and those kind of pieces. So I agree with you. I think it's important for them to know, hey, I can be involved on this. And there have been instances over the last couple of years where we've not had a parent rep on a BLT, which is a shame because that's a really powerful role. And I don't mean power like this, but like to have voice to that, to understand what goes on in the building and that type of thing. So you're right. I think moving forward, let them have that process in place. Yep.
Send an email to the whole district and say,
yep.
Taking
here's how we do
send
it.
Send an email to me. I'll forward you.
Here's how we do it. Okay. Last one. Stephanie, anything else?
I just think any questions, we don't have to answer this right now, about Robert Crown and why we're no longer traveling there. People said, oh, did the board cut the budget? That's just honestly what a couple people have asked me, because apparently the fifth graders used to take a bus to Robert Crown, and now the Robert Crown is coming to us this year instead. I don't know anything more about it than that, and maybe it's more than one school, so I assumed it was a district decision.
Oh, it's Karen Day.
Yeah, it was in all the buildings, and we talked about it last year, just the amount of time it took to get the kids out there. It's kind of stayed with the same presentation. It's an expensive program. It's $10 a child. and then doubled the cost a couple of years ago, but part of what we've done. So we talked to the MAD team and decided that we would just have it come here instead of taking the extra time to bus the kids out there. I mean, it is somewhat of a savings. We're not paying for the bus.
But the Robert Crown staff come and present.
But we still pay the same amount per kid. We're just not going there.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're getting the same thing.
Presentation.
Just,
yeah, it's just
we're doing it
physically
here. Yep. Moving the kids there.
Post transportation.
All right, last one, very quick. I did get to do lunch duty someplace. So I went over to, I peeked into Ben Franklin, but then I ran over to Churchill. And this is just one comment. First of all, it was the Marquardt folks were telling me that the number of kids who are accessing meals has definitely increased, and especially the fourth graders who are eating. So they're seeing a much bigger increase in kids accessing it. So they're pleased about that. The other comment came from a teacher who's in the new set of four classrooms, because I asked about the schedule, and they said it's definitely a learning process. And essentially her quote to me was, I don't have a better suggestion, and as the semester, as the weeks go forward, we're getting used to it. It's new. That's all she said about that. But she did say something interesting, and I think this has to, is good in terms of the way that those rooms were laid out. She said, the biggest difference I'm noticing, and one other teacher as well who chimed in said, is that now every day there's 100 children who are being funneled to these new classrooms away from the other core space. And she said that's probably one of the biggest things that we're noticing difference, is that they're out of those other hallways and they're being shifted and moving into that other core space the way it was designed. So I hadn't really thought about that, but that is, certainly a benefit of the way it was laid out. So it was an observation from her, and she said, just FYI, share it. So that is that. All right, upcoming meetings, October 3rd. Sorry, Patrick.
I was going to read a letter that I sent to Mr. Cooper, but it's fair to how minutes are being taken. I think the board has a copy of what I sent around, but basically, in essence, there's still disagreement on what the board action was and what Mr. Cooper's perception of what it was. It was basically landing on, it was a one-year contract. There was never discussion about perpetuity or continuity, budget discussions or annual independent. He was right. There was a conversation about $90,000 from subtraction from the budget that I did ask about, but the continuing of that conversation where the board landed was that was not going to be the case and is only going to be for the 2013. So there's the recording if anybody wants to listen to the recording, but Mr. Cooper and I have exchanged emails back and forth, but we're just going to agree to disagree on that topic.
And that would thank you. Do we actually thank have you. A reduction in the budget in 13-14, or was it more just a reallocation?
There's a
funds?
Reallocation. That's where but the board landed.
It supposed to be mm-hmm. a reduction?
No, that's where we started. But the board landed on a reallocation.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Patrick. All right, upcoming meetings, October 13th, 2015. I want to note that that's a Tuesday because we don't have school on Monday. So FYI, October 13th is a Tuesday. Regular board meeting, 7:30 at the Central Services office. Next meeting is October 26th, 2015. That's a Monday. Regular board meeting, 7:30, Central Services office. The board does not have a need to go into closed session at this time. They have a motion to adjourn the regular meeting.
Motion. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.